liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This Thorn in the Side Thursday. It's the 6th of October. Yes, another live program. Three in a row, even, no less. How about that? No, I'm being smart alecky. It's always my goal to be here. And I still feel like crap over missing so much last week while being, you know, sick. But we do have a Thorn in the Side Thursday program, and you know what? This is, it's more thorn than side, trust me. I've been pulling this stuff together. And, of course, I'm filled with, just a sense of, oh, damn it, you know? Because I should be, by all rights, in Washington, D.C., at the October 2011 gathering on Freedom Plaza, therein. Which is not to say that I don't enjoy our time together. It's just one of those moments that I think, I had an opportunity to do a little bit of a teach-in about mountaintop removal, maybe do a little bit of technical helping. But apparently they're getting live video out, so maybe they didn't need me so badly after all. I saw a tweet earlier today that said Mike Malloy absolutely electrified the crowd with his opening remarks there. If anybody's got the link to that, if it's made it up onto YouTube or anything yet, I would appreciate seeing it so we can run the audio for everybody. Good evening, Brother Albert. Brother Albert is in the room. In the chat room over at headonradionetwork.com, waiting for the rest of the usual suspects to arrive. He says the stream links aren't working quite properly. I'm not sure whether that's within headonradionetwork.com or over there at White Rose Society, but we will sort it out. And if you ever do have technical issues, feel free. I mean, shoot me an email or whatever, and I will do what I can to make things right or put you in contact with someone who can or may. No, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and there is an abundance of stuff to sort of make you go, oh! And, you know, as a guy who's had a big pain in the side for about a week, believe me when I say that I'm sensitive to that kind of thing. But just to get, why not? We will be talking about Occupy Wall Street. We will be talking about October 2011. We will talk about all of that in good time. But there are some other things out there that also bear mentioning, just by way of keeping up with the news, if you know what I mean. And this story just kind of grabbed me, because it had a direct correlation to another one. They just went together perfectly. Mike Tolson of the Houston Chronicle is the author. It's at chron.com, chron.com. Headline, suit. Detained woman forced to listen to Rush Limbaugh. It's the story of Bridget Nickerson Boyd and a Monday that went completely sideways for her. On the way to work, her car began smoking. Generally, when smoke begins coming out from under one's car, it's a good idea to pull over and even possibly to get out of same. And that's what she did. She pulled over to the side of the highway, and a sheriff's deputy by the name of Mark Goad, G-O-A-D, pulled in behind her. Well, how nice. Officer Friendly has come to the rescue to help out in busy traffic and a motorist in distress. It happens sometimes. It didn't happen to Bridget Nickerson Boyd. No, officer not so friendly, Mark Goad, sheriff's deputy, pulled behind her, wrote her a ticket for driving on the shoulder of the road. Never mind all that smoke boiling out of the car there, Sheriff's Deputy Goad. Wrote her a ticket for driving on the shoulder of the road, then decided to arrest her. Then she began experiencing a galloping heartbeat, probably because she was terrified. And she went to the hospital. So Sheriff's Deputy Goad followed her, Bridget Nickerson Boyd, to the hospital. And then after she was treated by doctors and released, he arrested her and took her into custody and drove her to jail. He snapped the bracelets down nice and tight on Bridget Nickerson Boyd, did Sheriff's Deputy Goad. And then turned up the radio. And I don't mean his police radio. You know, one Adam 12, see the lady. No. He turned up the AM radio, which he had previously tuned to the oxymoron, Flush Flemball. Now, this all happened about a year ago, October 4th, 2010. And she has since, just recently, Bridget Nickerson Boyd, filed a lawsuit. She alleges defamation, false imprisonment, malicious prosecution, assault, battery, and intentional infliction of emotional distress. The lawsuit papers claim Deputy Goad was aware that Boyd had not committed a crime and her arrest was without probable cause. A magistrate who held her preliminary hearing and heard all the evidence and saw the complaint against her dismissed every charge. But still, she was compelled, after getting out of the hospital, to listen to that merchant of sleaze, that troubadour of filth, Rush Limbaugh, as... by the way, did I mention that Bridget Nickerson Boyd is African-American? Yes, she is. And she had to sit there listening to Flush Flemball babbling on about black people all the way to the jail. Just another day in the land of the free, in the home of the brave. It won't happen, but it certainly would be nice if Bridget Nickerson Boyd could get about $1 million out of the Harris County Sheriff's Department. Because at this point, they owe her. You couldn't pay me enough money to listen to Flush Flemball for much more than a minute or two, except for what I'm about to do to you. Yeah, misery loves company. This is a beautiful 2.5 minutes. Do you know who Mike Stark is? A lot of you do, I'm sure. Mike Stark has made a career out of tormenting right-wing talk show hosts. So after about an hour's wait on Limbaugh's line, he got on the air as Kevin from Clifton Park, New York. this is fun.
New York, great to have you, sir, the EIB Network. Hello.
Hey, Russ, you've talked about how Durbin, it's just not his place as a senator to get involved. But I've heard Republicans get involved in telling women where they can get health care with Planned Parenthood. They said don't buy Dixie Chicks records. They've railed against the New York Times. And I know of at least one impotent pill-popping propagandist on the radio that got his start on Armed Forces Talk Radio at the behest of Republican interference.
Oh, pill-popping propagandist on the radio? Ooh. Mike Stark, you're my hero.
So, please don't tell us that it's not the place of a politician to speak out about issues that are important to millions and millions of people.
I don't know. I don't know what politician told people not to buy the Dixie Chicks records. I don't know what politician. What are you talking about? Planned Parenthood. All that. You know, you, again, identify yourself and the way you think as another obstacle that all the rest of us face for our freedom. You're just a glittering jewel of colossal ignorance. You're an arrogant snob. An arrogant, full-fledged snob, and you don't know 10% of what you think you know. Because you've been ill-informed, misinformed by a faulty education system or whatever it is.
Yeah, but what about the pill-popping propagandist, Rush? Dixie Chicks, that's all you got? Because it's true. Everything Mike Stark said is the truth. But as you listen to this, what you're going to hear is Flush Flimball come unglued. The laminate is just going to peel all back.
But people like you, you're just part of the pack we're going to have to run over. You're just part of the pack that we're going to look at and smile in the rearview mirror November 2012. Take care, Kevin. Have a great day. John, Union City, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the EIB Network. Hello.
Oh, thanks, Rush. It's so good to talk to you. I've been trying to get through for a long time. I got through a couple weeks ago when you were doing your bit about the I love me, if you love me comment by the president. So Bo didn't think my comment was worth anything then, so I didn't get a chance to give it. So I won't misrepresent myself and give it to you now. I called today to give you mega dittos from Northwest Pennsylvania. I was born and raised in Tom Ridge's neighborhood, and I could have answered your questions a couple weeks ago, too, if I could have gotten through then. But you're right, it's a target-rich day today with Hank Williams stuff and all that. And the main thing I told Bo was I am just...
Hey! Stop telling me what you told him and talk to me. You've got 1 minute. This is why you didn't get on last time. You've got 1 minute to get where you're going.
Well, Joe Biden should be leading the whole group of protesters out there on Occupy Wall Street because 95%...
Wow. Mike Stark got him so mad that he came unglued at a ditto head. They're not comfortable. They are not at all comfortable. Oh, and by the way, just in case you were wondering, we didn't take an actual official Vegas over-under, but it's happened. I mentioned it, I guess, Tuesday evening on the program. It didn't take long, and there it is. Today, in the wake of the whole Bocephus brouhaha, with Hank Williams Jr. You know, you knew it had to happen sooner or later. When I first heard about this story, David in Tennessee said, this'll happen almost instantaneously. And sure enough, it did. Today, news story broke, or not broke, but, well, it came out. With further response from good old Hank. Hank, why do you drink? Why do you snort glue? Or whatever that song's about. Yeah, via Raw Story, it was confirmed that today that Hank Williams Jr.'s relationship with ESPN is permanent. As in, goodbye. Now, it was Tuesday when we went over all the audio of him wasted out of what passes for his tiny mind babbling away on to Gretchen and Steve and the rest on the curvy couch at Fox when he said Obama playing golf with John Boehner was like Hitler playing golf with Netanyahu. And it was within a matter of minutes that the mothership, ESPN, had said, you know, I don't think we need to run that song anymore. And there it is. Lo and behold, it was announced this morning that ESPN has made the decision to just quit with the Bocephus altogether. Bodoofus. The statement on the ESPN website said, we have decided to part ways with Hank Williams Jr. We appreciate his contributions over the past years. The success of Monday Night Football has always been about the games, and that will continue. Not according to Bodoofus. After reading hundreds of emails, this is from his website. After reading hundreds of emails, I have made my decision. By pulling my opening October 3rd, you stepped on the toes of the First Amendment. Freedom of speech. So therefore me, my song, and all my rowdy friends are out of here. It's been a great run. And with a few very short words, Bodoofus managed to prove to the world that he is very nearly the perfect teabagger. Because teabaggers understand precisely zero about the Constitution of the United States. Well, my personal favorite is that part where he talks about pursuit of happiness and liberty and justice for all. Yeah. Teabaggers know nothing about the Constitution. Neither does Bodoofus. I really don't feel like it's necessary to do this, but I'll say it anyway. The First Amendment to the Constitution begins, Congress shall make no laws, blah, 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 blah. I guess it goes almost without saying that it doesn't say ESPN shall make no rules. There's no First Amendment implications for all my rowdy friends are ready to drink beer and watch football tonight. No. Now, granted, if the federal government had stepped in, or if some state government had stepped in by extension of the 14th Amendment, and said, Bodoofus, you done compared the President of the United States to Adolf Hitler, and you can't sing no more. That would be a violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. However, when ESPN, a commercial enterprise, I might add, interested in providing a linkage between potential buyers of crap, mainly beer during, you know, Monday Night Football, and the purveyors of said crap, when somebody that ostensibly is associated with them says something stupid like, you know, Barack Obama is like Hitler, they are completely within their rights to get rid of said individual. Obvious, one might think, but not to teabaggers and ignorant sacks of dung like Bodoofus. But why are we not surprised? No, it was actually, three days tops, is that what, four? They didn't fire me, I fired them. I quit them, I pulled my song. I wouldn't play it if they begged me, and agreed with me that Obama is like Hitler. I would not do it. Have another pill, Bo Doofus. So we got that going for us on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And more and more. But if you were in cuffs in a cruiser and you heard that babbling idiot Limbaugh, wouldn't you want to file suit too? Because I would. Ugh. But no, there's lots of stupid out there. Some of the cutest cutest commercial on commercial broadcast television right now is, without a doubt, the Volkswagen ad with the little kid dressed up in the Darth Vader costume, whom I will no longer refer to as a little boy, because Agnes says it could just as easily be a little girl and quit being such a damn sexist, Bob. And she's right. It's the cutest thing on TV. But second cutest, just because it's so, what, so against type, is the series of ads for, what, Verizon? Sleazebags. That feature Neon Deion Sanders as, I guess, the DirecTV, or the, no, not DirecTV, the NFL fairy. Buzzing around, haranguing guys on the couch for not having every game on because they've got stupid cable. Busting giant Cheetos against his leg and throwing it at the TV. And it's on! It's cute. It's funny. Well, I guess his private life isn't. Neon Deion, unless I'm looking at something, a story that's really, really old. Is it? Yeah, okay. It's a couple of weeks old. Deion has filed for divorce. Well, okay, now he's not filing for divorce. Multiple sources reported that Hall of Fame cornerback Deion Sanders had filed for divorce from his wife of 11 years. Her name is Pilar Sanders. She has a career as a reality television star, apparently. And by some means or another, he explained his desire for a divorce by saying, "Enough is enough. I never signed up for all this. Enough is enough. If I wanted a model or a television star, I would have married one a long time ago. All I wanted was a housewife." Because, you know, what Deion wants, Deion gets. Right. Meanwhile, after having made that statement, he said, "I've never filed for divorce and hadn't made a statement to any media." But still, divorce or no divorce. The hell kind of a statement? If I wanted a model or a television star, I would have married one a long time ago. All I wanted was a housewife. So, I guess Mrs. Deion Sanders gets no independent reality apart from the reality that Deion defines for her? Not surprising, though. Yeah, what else? Yeah, there's another, sexist much, Deion? And then there's another question to be asked. Sexist much, Scott Walker? Yeah, this is real genius. Scott Walker, the senator from Massachusetts, is in a race against Elizabeth Warren for Senate in Massachusetts. And at some point in time, Elizabeth Warren was asked how she paid for college. And she said, I worked. I didn't take my clothes off. Which was a direct reference to the fact that Scott Walker did. Had the staple right in the middle. Ooh, that's got to hurt. In Playgirl. So he goes, he gives an interview. Well, this is it. Listen to it for yourself.
A joke that Senator Scott Brown made on the radio is getting some attention today. At Tuesday night's Democratic debate, Elizabeth Warren made light of the fact that Brown was a model while in law school, saying, quote, I kept my clothes on. But listen to what Brown said this morning when he was asked about that remark on our WZLX.
Have you officially responded to Elizabeth Warren's comment about how she didn't take her clothes off?
Thank God.
That's what I said. I said, hey, look, can you blame a good-looking guy for you know, for wanting to...
You know what? Listen, bottom line is, you know, I didn't go to Harvard. You know, I went to the School of Hard Knocks, and I did whatever I had to do to pay for school.
Right.
And for people who know me and know what I've been through, my mom and dad married and divorced four times each, and, you know, some real challenges growing up, you know, whatever. You know, let them throw stones. I did what I had to do.
The Democratic Party immediately emailed news of the remark out, and it's quickly spreading throughout Twitter.
Yeah, I didn't go to Harvard. I went to the School of Hard Knocks. I did whatever I had to do to get by. Scott Brown!
You don't have to put on the red light. Those days are over. You don't have to sell your body to the night.
Scott Brown!
You don't have to wear that dress tonight. Walk the streets for money.
Scott Brown!
You don't have to put on the red light!
Scott Brown!
You don't have to put on the red light!
Scott Brown! Scott Brown! I did whatever I had to do to get by. At least... she didn't take her clothes off. thank God. Yeah, because she's not a voluptuous woman. So our second award for sexist much, Scott Brown? Yeah. Jeebus criminy. So, like I said, we are not without stuff to work with this evening. We've got pro-lifers, you know, pro-life Alabama Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third. Pro-life, remember? Yeah, he's a pro-life guy. He's so pro-life, he's just sorry that them little brown people was born. Can't make this stuff up.
Think it's bad that all these kids are not in school now? All these Hispanic kids have disappeared from the schools? Do you think that's a bad thing?
Well, all I would just say to you is it's a sad thing that we've allowed a situation to occur for decades in which large numbers of people are in the country illegally, and that's not going to it's going to have unpleasant, unfortunate consequences.
Yeah, that's in regard to a discussion with the hate radio host Laura Ingraham, in which Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Third was discussing the effect that Alabama's new Papa's Place law with regard to immigrants is having on little children going to school, because they're not. Because the law that Alabama has in place, which has been allowed to go forward for reasons that are beyond me, compels school officials to determine whether or not little children are here illegally. Yeah, really. From Jefferson Beauregard Sessions with Hood. He says, all I would say to you is this, a sad thing that we've allowed a situation to occur for decades as large numbers of people are in the country illegally, and it's going to have unpleasant, unfortunate consequences. You know, like little children being able to learn to read English. I thought we wanted them to speak English. Well, not if we're going to teach them to in our little old, good old, white little old schools, I don't. Jesus. Laura Ingram described the whole thing in Alabama as a sob story. And he said, I couldn't agree more. One of the sad consequences of illegal immigration is that families can be hurt in the process. It's not a consequence of illegal immigration. Dadgummit, there's debate and then there's this. It's not a consequence of illegal immigration or undocumented immigration. It's a consequence of a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy, hate-filled, right-wing, fundamentalist freaks in the Alabama State Legislature who decided that little brown children don't need to be educated. Oh, no, he might be taking up a spot for some little old white child. This past Monday, around 2,285 Hispanic students failed to show up for school in Alabama. Now, as a result of that, Alabama will lose school funding from the federal government every day the children don't attend. Undocumented immigrants in Alabama pay somewhere around $130.3 million in state and local taxes. That in last year alone. Not anymore. Why? Because people like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood have some family values. As long as them families is nice and white. God almighty. And they're lining up behind Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Foot. You think I'm making that up, don't you? That really is his name. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions the Foot. Up in the northwest corner of Alabama, a man named Mo Brooks, who is the first Republican to hold the seat in that district since Reconstruction, I believe. And it also happens to be my birthplace. He said little Hispanic children not going to school is, and these are his words, the intended consequences of Alabama's legislation with respect to illegal aliens. We don't have the money in America to keep paying for the education of everybody else's children from around the world. Second, with respect to illegal aliens who are now leaving jobs in Alabama, that's exactly what we want. Because, you know, so many Alabamians are out there just clamoring to work at the hog slaughter farms and in the agricultural fields of, say, Baldwin County, Alabama. Makes me want to go down there and spend a week or two just knocking on. Did you vote for Mo Brooks? What's wrong with you? You living in northwest Alabama with hydroelectric power coming from the TVA. Yeah, some coal-fired power too. Electricity, you'd still be eating dirt. For one, for the federal government. But you want them out of your life, don't you? Jesus criminy. The stupid. It hurts. And before we take a little break and then come back and go to the phones, a giggle. Well, I'm sure it's not a giggle for the guy it happened to, but You remember when Ohio wanted to pass that law allowing people to take guns to bars and stadiums and the like? Well, the part of it allowing people to take guns to bars took effect last week. But this has nothing to do with a bar. This has to do with a sober guy. Fellow goes into a barber shop. Sounds like the beginning of a joke. Fellow went into Kurt Volkel's barber shop, get a haircut. Morning, Kurt. Need a little trim here, just a little off the top. Well, they don't talk like that in Ohio. Where's Guy James when I need him? Just a little off the top, please. And, well, there's an old joke out there. It was one of my father's favorites. He was always good for just an old-fashioned knee slapper. What happened to the butcher when he backed into his meat grinder? Yeah, he got a little behind in his work. Well, Kurt Vogel's customer was getting ready to jump up, climb up into the barbering chair when his 9mm pistol fell out of his holster, fell on the ground, and went off and shot Kurt Vogel in the butt. Because, you know, when you kiss your wife goodbye in the morning, because, you know, dearest, you're getting a little fuzzy again. I think it's time you go down to Kurt and let him trim those wild hairs out of your ears and clear up that unibrow of yours and, well, you know, just tidy you up a little bit and get it tapered in the back, would you?
Well, all right, Martha. Just a minute. Got to strap on my piece. It's a dangerous world out there, especially going to the barber shop.
The saddest thing out of this is that the barber's the guy who took it. In a just world, the idiot with the 9mm would have shot himself. Now, you got to wonder, there's all kinds of laws that underpin these concealed carry. What kind of legal remedies does Barber Volkel have against this militia man? This armed citizen protecting his Second Amendment right to arm bears. You know, for those of you not familiar with firearms, a 9mm round's pretty quick. As in thousands of feet per second. It exited the muzzle of the 9mm pistol, went plumb through the barbering chair where Barber Volkel was sitting, plumb through Barber Volkel's wallet, and buried itself deep in his buttock. He was 2 hours in the hospital, where doctors in the most wonderful healthcare system in the world said, Barber Volkel, you know what I think we're going to do? We're going to stitch you up and leave the bullet right there as a lasting reminder of our founding father's dedication to freedom and the ability to keep and bear arms. Because you gotta strap on. You got to strap on to go and get shaving a haircut. Jiminy. Let's take a break and come back. Your phone calls are welcome. You know that, of course. This is Conversation Radio. The number 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email comes in, of course, to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. And we got a little bit of that listener support just a little bit ago. Thank you very kindly, to the tune of $15, and it is much, much needed. We'll be right back.
Now, Trigger Jackson was a gambling cub who joined the Uptown Social Club where shooting dice was everybody's win. But every time he rolled the dice, he found them dice as cold as ice. It seems they favored everyone but him. Then Trigger stopped the game and said, I'm not the doubting kind, but there's a slight suspicion that keeps running through my mind. Somehow it don't seem natural you make points with so much ease, while all I throw is boxcars and a flock of twos and threes. And furthermore, I'm stating I don't like the dice you use. I notice one is all fives and the other one is twos. I'm familiar with the house rules. I know they're plainly writ, but I'm going to revise them and change them up a bit. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. Take my warning or pay the price, 'cause it ain't healthy to try it twice. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. Now just to make it plain so that you all'll understand, this ain't no water pistol that I'm holding in my hand. We're going to get some new dice down at the corner store, and then we're going to jerk that army blanket off the floor. Now a word to you short rollers, here's the thing I recommend. Get distance with them dice when I'm on the fading end. I hope the situation's clear to everyone in this room. And now if we all is agreed, suppose that we resume. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. Take my warning or pay the price, 'cause it ain't healthy to try it twice. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. Now Trigger's luck was getting worse, and soon he had an empty purse. He stooped and turned his back upon the crowd. He went down in his shoe for 10, he shot the works and lost again, and then he rose and spoke an accent loud. Now what I got to say is final, we ain't gonna put this to no vote. There's something in my craw and it's coming out, quote. Now when it comes your shot, make them ivories bounce about, and I ask you very kindly, leave them tops and bottoms out. Now just let me hear him cackle, I want to hear him moan and chime, and don't forget to shoot with only one pie at a time. Now here's something else that I'm going to tell you, it's one and all. Now when you throw them dice, make them bounce against the wall. Now, that's all for this evening, but I want my dough I lost to you. I want that $8 from my pocket and the $10 from my shoe. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. Look ahead, take my warning or pay the price, 'cause it ain't healthy to try it twice. Loaded pistol and loaded dice. And now that I'm about to go, brothers, I'm going to leave you with this advice. You can't beat a loaded pistol with a pair of loaded dice.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, October 6, 2011.
We have 2.4 million green jobs, according to Brookings, right now, and the Republicans want to get rid of them.
Coal is a drag on the economy.
Our current Arctic capabilities are very limited.
So, of course, offshore drilling in the Arctic is a go. Surprise! Koch Industries will profit from the Keystone XL pipeline after saying they wouldn't. Plus,
we need to have drastic climate change policy.
Occupy Wall Street protesters want to save the future with action on clean energy and climate change.
Silly Occupy Wall Street protesters. All of that and more straight ahead. From Bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
One day, our environment will get bad enough that we'll want to act on it. Maybe when Florida sinks underwater, then we'll take action. Perhaps by giving Nana water wings and a can of shark repellent.
Poor Nana. This is your Green News Report.
I'm
Okay, Desi Doyen, we are not prepared for an oil spill in the Arctic. That's what the military has been warning us. It's an issue of national security, so of course we're listening to them, and we're going to do it anyway.
Yep. 2 months ago, U.S. Coast Guard Admiral Robert Papp testified to the Senate on oil drilling in the Arctic, saying that the federal government is not prepared to respond to an oil spill of any size.
We do not have any coastal or shoreside infrastructure. We do not have a seasonal base to even hangar our aircraft or to sustain our crews. Imagine if we had to mount a major pollution response. We'd have to create our own infrastructure.
So naturally, on Monday, the Obama administration announced it is moving forward with approvals for offshore oil drilling leases off the coast of Alaska.
Oh, brother.
It's a major victory for oil companies in the battle over the Arctic. The permits were originally issued by the Bush administration in 2008. Environmental groups say the oil industry's oil spill preparedness in the Arctic is ridiculously inadequate.
And so when do we have any victories that are not for the oil companies?
Yeah, got me.
We have 80,000 coal miners in America. Now, we God bless them. They are America's heroes. They risk their lives to keep the lights cut on. There are 80,000 of them. We have 2.4 million green jobs, according to Brookings, right now, and the Republicans want to get rid of them.
That was Van Jones on HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher last week on the surge of clean energy jobs, the fastest-growing job sector in the United States, even as the number of coal mining jobs continues to fall. Coal companies have claimed in the last month that new EPA air pollution regulations will force them to close coal-fired power plants and cut jobs. But the Associated Press reports that the closures are actually due more to declining coal reserves in Central Appalachia. All of the easy coal is gone in the region, and what remains is less profitable and more destructive to extract.
But let's blame Obama and the EPA. Yep, that's the ticket.
But even more shocking, a new economic study shows that the true costs of coal are a serious drag on the U.S. economy. Yale University researchers calculated that every $1 of cheap electricity from coal costs $2 in damage to the U.S. in higher health care costs. Let's say that again. Every $1 of electricity from coal does $2 in damage to the U.S. due to higher health care costs because of air pollution from coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, that's only if you listen to those pointy-headed academics who actually study these things.
Notably, the pointy-headed academics did not examine other external costs like taxpayer-funded cleanup of land and water pollution. More shady dealings with the billionaire Koch brothers right after a bombshell Bloomberg News report on Monday that the U.S. petrochemical giant Koch Industries, owned by the secretive right-wing billionaire Koch brothers, flouted the U.S. trade embargo by using a foreign subsidiary to hide sales of equipment to Iran. Now, Koch Industries has been caught using the same dodge regarding the controversial Keystone XL pipeline proposed for the Midwest. InsideClimate.com reports a new investigation shows that Koch Industries told the U.S. Congress they had no financial interest in the pipeline. But regulatory filings in Canada show a Koch subsidiary told regulators there it has, quote, a direct and substantial interest in the pipeline to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars.
Unbelievable. You're saying that Kochs are liars or criminals after they've been shown to bribe foreign countries, after they've been shown to do business with terrorist nations? Now they're lying to the U.S.? I can't believe it.
The billionaire Koch brothers and the proposed Keystone Pipeline are also targets of the Occupy Wall Street movement and the hundreds of protest actions blossoming in cities around the country. In interviews with ThinkProgress.org, Occupy Wall Street protesters tied together the astronomical profits of the fossil fuel companies and Wall Street with corporate cash and politics and the climate change denial industry.
We know that Wall Street has given millions and millions of dollars to our candidates, you know, basically buying votes. We know that Koch brothers, big corporations like BP and ExxonMobil, are large funders of climate change denial.
There's a new public hearing on the Keystone XL pipeline at the State Department on Friday. There are rallies scheduled for that and around the country over the weekend.
Check our website, greennews.bradblog.com, for much more on all of our stories today. And while you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report to help us continue to occupy your public airwaves. Download us anytime at iTunes, listen to us on your smart device via Stitcher Radio, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Way up north, way up north, to Alaska, to go north, for us is home. North, to Alaska, to go north, for us is home. Big Sam left Seattle in the year of 92. With George Pratt, his partner, and brother Billy, too. They crossed the Yukon River and found the Bonanza Gold. Below that old white mountain, just a little southeast of Nome, Sam crossed the majestic mountains to the valleys far below. He talked to his team of Huskies as he mushed on through the snow. With the northern lights a-running wild in the land of the midnight sun. Yes, Sam McCord was a mighty man in the year of 1901. Where the river is winding, big nuggets they're finding. North to Alaska, but on north, the rush is on.
Yeah, the river will be winding with carboniferous goo before long. If you heard Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, Jeebus. Jim asking with regard to the previous story, what kind of strap-on did he have again? that was a 9mm strap-on. And for all intents and purposes, if you've got to take a pistol to the barbershop, you've got some of those kind of issues, you know? Yeah. So enough shilly-shallying about. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Brother Albert. How are you, brother?
Oh. I'm doing now, you know, now with the Occupy Wall Street, I'm overjoyed. It's a beautiful thing to see just sprout into being, isn't it?
And growing, much to the consternation and apparently mystification of our betters.
Of course.
What are they doing there? And they're not dressed very well either. I don't understand.
Well, see, the pigs are drinking too much whiskey. That's why they missed it. So we'll see. We'll see. I at least love the temperature check that this situation, no matter what it yields. You know, it shows that there's a whole lot of people who are aware, understand a lot of the issues. I mean, you know, I love how there's so many Tea Party comparisons, but there is no comparison. Some of these guys, you know, a little, you know, yeah, right, they got a tattoo on the face, and so they show the picture of the person with the tattoo on their face. But
that's not the guy with the tattoo on his face's fault. That's the attention span of a Jack Russell Terrier for-profit media cameraman's fault, isn't it?
Exactly. And who's to say that guy with the tattoo on his face doesn't have a reason for it? Who's to say that he doesn't know? You don't hear him talking, because every person that I've heard talking over there, they kind of know what's going on, and they enunciate their positions pretty brilliantly. I mean, you know, they're not going to show that guy with the Jesse, you know, who just basically was that Garrett, Major Garrett, whatever that guy's name is, just handed him his hat. Yeah, you know, I like how he was wearing that union cap.
Yeah, the little kepi.
That gave me a little chuckle. Yeah, the kepi. That gave me a nice chuckle. And that guy completely annihilated him in every way, shape, and form. And that's why it wasn't ever broadcast. Duh. they're not broadcasting anything. You know, I mean, granted, all right, every now and then you see a sign looks like it was scribbled by a two-year-old, but that's the artistic, you know, that's like an artistic way that they designed the sign to look like it was made by a two-year-old. They don't understand anything. They're not spelling Moran out there. They're not telling anybody, you know, get a brain, Moran. That guy's not out there.
Nope.
You know, the
homeschoolers for Perry are not there.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, get your government hands off my Medicare. Oh, please. Ain't none of that. None of that. That's AstroTurf. This is real. This is real. I hope that this makes something. I really do. I hope people wake up and listen. Obama has a prime opportunity in this situation. A prime opportunity. You know, and he has an opportunity to change the frame which is how we've discussed, you know, our economy, our environment. You know, he has an ability to construct a frame now that, you know, will hopefully, you know, show us a new image, a new paradigm. You know, what are they talking? They're talking about what oil in the Arctic? What oil? What are you going to do? What are you going to do up there? There's nothing up there. And if there is any oil up there, what is it, 6 months, a year, 2 years?
Right.
We're down to tar sands already. We're done, right? All the cheap coal in Appalachia is gone. We're done. $2 for every dollar of energy generated. What? And that's just for health care? What?
Yeah, that's not the other costs at all, no.
No, what are we going to get? I mean, you know, I mean, Jesus, what are we going to show the wisdom to look at our environment and say, hey, you know, just, you know, putting anthropomorphical features on the animals and the trees. Hey, how do you guys get along? Oh, you tap into that big, giant, burning ball of plasma in the sky? Oh, wow, how do you do that? Is that how you guys have survived 200, 300, 1.5 billion years? You know, I don't understand what their end game is. I've said this a billion times. I know I'm a broken record about it, but what economy on a dead planet? What economy?
Yeah.
What is that? That doesn't... What are they talking about? You know, of course we need equality. We don't need it. And I tell you, I've heard such beautiful things come out. Haven't you heard people talking about a lifetime earning cap? I know Roseanne Barr said something about it.
Yeah.
She said, you know, and her cap was lower than mine. I like to make my cap a little high, you know, just, you know, so the greedy, the avarice lovers amongst us, you know, they can argue with it a little less. You know, I mean, if I give someone $200 million lifetime earning cap, you know, it's tough to argue because $200 million is, you know, at least a wheelbarrow full of money. And if you can't, you know, my whole argument, if you
it's
can't
a hell of a wheelbarrow, Albert.
Well, you know, I'm trying to be modest, you know. I mean, when we're talking about a wheelbarrow like that, what can't you do? What kind of life can't you live with $200 million? Why do you need $1 billion? What is that? What's wrong with you? Don't you understand history? Right? I, as Leonard Cohen said, I've seen the nations rise and fall. I've heard their stories, heard them all. But love's the only engine of survival. And when we sit here and look at a civilization that is walking in the direct fossilized footsteps of every other massive state or power throughout history. What, now we're in the avarice steps. Now we're here in the avarice. What comes after avarice?
Well, but see, I don't know that we're... I think we're past that, really.
Certainly.
I think we're more in the screaming and running to get on the lifeboats part. You know, because that story, and I've mentioned it a number of times, and you just mentioned it, and Brad Friedman mentioned it. I know what's going to happen to my beloved Appalachia when there ain't no more to be got. Mm-hmm. Goodbye! Goodbye!
Yep.
Peace. See ya! Good luck!
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good luck, hillbillies! Because there's not going to be any jobs programs. There's not going to be any... diversification of the economy.
Nope.
The coal industry, by its very nature, by definition, doesn't want a diversified economy. They want to be the only game in town. The same with the oil industry. They want to be all there is.
That's right.
But how do you just ignore what Van Jones said?
Exactly.
Bless their little hearts. There's 80,000 coal miners. And there's 2 point how many million jobs in green energy now?
2.9.
Yeah, wouldn't it be nice to have some of those here in Appalachia?
Well, I mean, you would think. I mean, 2.9, you know, you would have barely noticed 80,000. If you had 80,000 of anything next to 2.9 million of anything.
Yeah, 80,000, rounding error.
Yeah, that's, you know, the chuff and the that you sweep off into the garbage. I mean, that's nothing. You know, and who's to say, you know, what do you think, you can't replace those jobs with windmills and solar power? I mean, you think about that. You know, and that's what Solyndra hurt. But Solyndra's only one of 49 companies.
Yeah, and Solyndra, you know, Solyndra is not the poster child for some sort of green excess that it is being beaten up to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, how? And not only that, you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Those guys are manufacturing thin film. You know, and now... You know, and you know I like to keep, you know that I love to keep on top. That's why I get up in the morning. I get up in the morning, you know, as part of my whole reason to being is finding out what's going on next. Well, we're going to start using graphite, carbon, instead of silicone. No, instead of silica for the panels. If you now we're starting to learn how to paint with molecules. And you know, you sit there and you watch a show like what is that? You know, I mean, you think, oh, how complicated the machine will need to be. Man, and you need to go watch how it's made. Because everything is complicated how it makes. There's a little ball and a wall and a wheel and this and that and a flame and this and that. There's all these little things and just for one little toothpick. You know, so if a toothpick takes that much effort, you know, it almost takes a Rosenberg machine to make, except it gives you toothpicks. You know, what do you think? You can't make solar panels out of graphite by having one polarized sheet going one way, one polarized sheet going the other way, and so on and so forth and so on and so forth until you build up a panel. You can't do that? Of course you can do that. There's no limit to how to the things we can do, except when people, like these idiots, they want to go back to the 1900s with everything. You know, that's their freedom. They think that that's...
Buggy whips forever!
Yeah, that's what they think. That's freedom. That's when we had freedom in America. 1900s, 1800s, 1700s. What? You people are off. You are completely off the reservation. You're not even on the planet when you start talking like that. So what we need to do is be progressive. Even Teddy Roosevelt said. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt, way back in the day, said that governments have to be progressive. Well, what does progressive mean? But we all know the government's not stupid. The military's not stupid. They know they can't deal with any kind of ecological disaster. The government knows the oil's running out. Heck, that's what we knew in 2001. That's why we went into Iraq, isn't it? It's another reason we went into Afghanistan, to secure the gas pipelines and to happen to prospect for lithium and all the other nice little compounds that are there. We're not stupid, and they shouldn't treat us like we're stupid. But, you know, it's funny. And no one trusts the government. You ever know? No one ever trusts the government. Now, the government, I'll give them, they tell us the truth 25% of the time, if we're looking for it, right?
Right.
Most of the times, they just evade, and they skirt, and they dance, right? When was the last time a corporation ever told us the truth on anything? Ever. Oh, this pill is safe. Oh, this is a good product. We don't test on animals. We don't do this. And they all, it's all lies. It's always lies. Always, always, always lies. Right? It's the same thing where corporations never tell us the truth. And now we have things like Citizens United, which these right-wing religious fanatics are the ones who, you know, pushed into our face. Now corporations can donate as much money as they want because, you know, corporations are people, and, you know, money is speech. So, all animals are equal. Some animals more equal than others.
There you go. Welcome to the animal farm.
Exactly.
And exactly. You know, Albert, I follow these technology stories. And I had one from News Ninja Gene just the other day. This will make you run screaming out into the yard. The snow hasn't started falling yet, has it?
No, it's a beautiful... Well, we had a nice coronal mass ejection, so we have nice warm weather.
Okay. Just dig this. This is a Bloomberg story.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is one of those where there's sort of this little vision of the world that can be there.
Mm-hmm.
Headline... Utilities giving away power as wind, sun flood European grid. Apparently they've had wind and sun spills in Europe, Albert. I got to have the news voice. The 15-mile-per-hour winds that buffeted northern Germany on July 24th caused the nation's 21,006...
caused the nation's 21,600 windmills to generate so damn much power that utilities such as Eon AG and RWE AG had to pay consumers to take it off the grid. Rather than an anomaly, the event marked the 31st hour this year when power companies lost money on their electricity in the intraday market because of a torrent of supply from wind and solar parks. The phenomenon was unheard of 5 years ago.
five years ago when they were 29,000, whatever it is. Oh, my God. See, this is what I'm saying.
I think we have built too many windmills. There are too many solar panels on the roof.
But that's what I mean, are we going to be led by the dollar? That doesn't drive me. The dollar doesn't drive me. It almost repulses me. I don't look at life life sitting here on this, spinning on this spaceship Earth, spinning through space, and we're going to boil it all down to where the dollar is. We're swimming in energy. We're literally swimming in energy. Constantly. Constantly energy is around us. There's more energy between my two fingers that can be, hopefully you would research and how we can tap that than we've ever consumed, but all the drilling and all the blowing and blasting. You know, I mean, all these things are right at the tip of our fingertips. That's what we all know why there's no, they don't turn that, the tokamak reactor doesn't work, but there's no real reason that no one's searching out for fusion. We know why. Because they have coal in the ground and they gotta sell it. They gotta make their money. They gotta they gotta clean the shelves before they even consider new merchandise. You know, and then they figure, how are we gonna charge for this? You know, I mean, that's regressive ways of, trying to keep us, charging us for everything. When, we all know that money is not gonna, if we're to be here in 1,000 years, money has to become irrelevant. It has to. It limits us. It lowers our standards.
Or if it's not irrelevant, it has to be re-understood, I think, Albert, as something other than what it is. Because, it has to be de-religionized? It has to become a medium of exchange again as opposed to an object of worship?
Yeah, I can see a medium of exchange between, me and the grocer and me and the this and me on the local level. But when we talk about our long-term survival, what is more important than our long-term survival?
Because, see, I keep coming up with nothing.
I mean, for real. When we sit here, even if we just take those primitive Native American Iroquois tribe and their little law that, you don't do any actions that without considering how that is going to affect the next seven generations. Well, those primitives, if you ask me, had a damn good idea. Seven generations at least. At least seven generations. If you considered like that, we wouldn't have the problems we have today. We wouldn't. We just simply wouldn't have the carcinogens.
The first charge of explosives never would have gone off on the first mountaintop. From my local perspective. Right.
Yeah, that's the problem, is they see themselves separate. And as we saw in that, and there was another, where's that article, Well, even Scott Brown with the way he did and the way you talked about Deion Sanders, it's that, that conservative, strong father figure. That's where, I want my wife in the kitchen, damn it. I am the father. I tell you what you do. I don't know if you caught that horrific story from that, I forget his name, but he's a teenage to young 20s. He was electrocuted because his parent, because he was gay. When he basically tells the story about how he was a missionary, Baptist missionary, and da-da-da-da-da, and they were on the mission, and they got a Playboy on the thing, so they were all looking at it, and he was a good little Christian boy, and he noticed he felt so righteous how it didn't affect him looking at naked bodies of women. It didn't affect him, but he realized that he felt that way about his best friend. And he tells his dad proudly, I wasn't taken in by the devil. And he's like, and he kind of admitted that he was gay, and his father immediately puts a fist in his face. And proceeds to continue beating him. And then proceeds to, drive this kid to where he's standing on the roof. And they electrocute him. They hot ice and fire. And they use all these tactics to try to, change his mind about being gay. Like he made the decision to begin with, right? So what happens? He winds up, he's going to sit there, jump off the roof. He realizes he's not quite that high, so he pretends that he's straight. He leaves the house. His family never talks about it. That's how it is. Because they show, oh, he listened to Daddy, and Daddy's always right, and so he listened to Daddy, that's it. End of story. No discussion. No nothing. There's nothing beyond that in that Christian realm. Same thing with the Citizen Jedi. These people are crazy to us. These people are just, what is that? You torture your own child? Now you don't talk to him? And you say if he comes back, you'll shoot him? What? And that's like the standard, isn't it?
I've got another one here just today, Albert. That you remember the story came out of L.A. Oh, a couple of years back. The guy who they were school children, not a guy, school children, and one child, eighth graders, I believe.
Okay.
One child brought a pistol to school,
mm-hmm.
and pumped a couple of rounds into the back of the head of another boy. The killer was Brandon McInerney, and he murdered Larry King.
Mm-hmm.
And it was as clearly a hate crime as a hate crime can be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've tried to try Brandon McInerney now. And they had a hung jury. And the jurors are now stepping up, and get this, I mean, this is one of those run screaming into the yard moments, too. Nancy Shulman was a member of the jury, and she and two other jurors came to a hearing where prosecutors said they're going to retry McInerney as an adult again for first-degree murder. And, I got issues with trying 14-year-olds as adults, okay? I just do. But they're going to do it. They're going to try him for first-degree murder again, but they're not going to allege that it was a hate crime. And these former jurors were wearing light blue rubber bracelets. Everybody's got a bracelet now, Albert, that said, Free Brandon. Now, he was 14 years old when he carried a .22-caliber handgun to school in his backpack, took a seat behind Larry King, 15, and shot him twice in the back of the head. That, in any circumstance, is cold-blooded murder.
Mm-hmm.
And this former juror says, this wasn't about him being gay. This was about bullying. There was a ton of evidence that Larry was acting inappropriately with other kids at school, and they didn't do anything to stop him. He was just being too gay. That part I added.
Yeah.
So therefore, this woman and two others voted to acquit and hang the jury because what? Because it's okay to blow away gay people for if they say I like you? Wow.
Yeah. They're filthy. They're disgusting. And I don't want to start on the, I don't want to get caught by the double edge of the sword that we wield. But my God, it's almost subhuman. I mean, it's just like that's how you go about your life.
Well, I wouldn't say it's subhuman because that assumes, Albert, that there are species that are beneath us. And I'm not aware of any animal species that go around murdering each other for sport. If a cheetah chases down a Thompson's gazelle on the African savanna, the cheetah is surviving and will eat that gazelle. And so will the vultures and the hyenas and whatnot. There's no animus involved. There's no malice in se.
Well, bottlenose dolphins do that, but
they kill for sport?
They kill for sport and they rape as well.
Ooh.
So, yeah. But
well, and they're closer to us than your average cheetah, too, aren't they?
Yeah, kind of. So that's what I'm talking about. Like, maybe they're just human. I don't know.
No, what they are is barbarians.
Barbarians, yeah, exactly.
They have eschewed all the progress that humanity has through fits and starts attempted to make over this, geologically or epochally or what, we've only been here for a blip. But, we've been around being human for a while, and there is this slow, constant, dogged struggle to stop being monsters. And, you know, these people simply don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to struggle to not be a monster. I'm a monster. Monster's what I am. I'm a happy monster. Shoot the little bastard in the back of the head.
But, you know, it's, I don't know, I guess I leave you with this. I don't want to filibuster everything. But I watched the documentary, the new Kenneth Burns documentary on Prohibition.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, we all know hindsight, Prohibition was a dumb thing to do. But I didn't make the connection that this film made, you know, before, but it helped, it enlightened me. It showed me that it was women who were the main driving force behind getting, you know, some sort of, I don't even know, some response to the lives that they were living, which were, you know, subordinates to these drunkards who would, you know, spend and make their life, you know, pretty difficult by any stretch of the imagination. And it was that movement or that issue which is kind of what lit the spark. Now, granted, we all know Prohibition was wrong. We know it doesn't work. But I'll take what it gave us, which is women's suffrage, right? It got women up and out. It got them rights. I mean, without that, we wouldn't have. Without women standing up and saying, hey, we can't take this drunkardness anymore. That was before the Civil War. Without that movement to continue going and going and going, and that pain of the alcoholism that was, you know, caused, but without that pain, we wouldn't be where we are today. Without that, we wouldn't have the middle class because, you know, who would have been standing up for the workers, the female workers? Who would have been standing up for them? Nobody. They wouldn't have been able to even stand up for themselves if they didn't have, you know, a little bit of a fire into their rear end and get them going. So, you know, and I hate to say it like this, but this is kind of how it is. We see these horrors throughout history to know what not to do. And we know which direction not to go into. You know, that's what Auschwitz, that's why never again, right? Never again means never again. That means never again. So you can't forget it. You can't sit there and not look at it. And you can't even allow it to even begin to grow again. Ever. And that's what all this means. And, you know, hopefully we evolve to the point that, you know, people can just be people. And, you know, people who are maybe a little insecure of their own sexuality can take a compliment from someone of their own sex and take it for what it is. It's a compliment. That's a nice compliment. Most women won't tell you that. You know, like, every time a gay guy ever said, hey, you're cute, and I really, thank you. Because, you know, that's that's a compliment. What are you going to say?
You know, I don't get a lot of, hey, you're cute from anybody, Albert. So,
thank you, Bob.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. And my you know what? My I'm not at all threatened by that. But I am extremely honored.
There you go. Yeah, just please don't, you know. Yeah. It's not that it's
right. You don't have to shoot the kid in the back of the head.
It's people being honest with you. What's wrong with honesty? Don't be that afraid of the truth. You know, we already know. We see what the fear of the truth does. You know, we already know. It's the conservative mind. It's the entire, you know, it's their entire existence. It's their entire being. You know,
and yet there's Flush Flimball in that clip from earlier in the program. Mm-hmm. Well, you're just the ones that we're going to run over. We're going to leave you behind in November 2012.
Isn't projection grand? I would pay to listen to Rush Limbaugh do that. And he is. He's falling apart. You know they're falling apart. They're all falling apart. Because they've never been on solid ground. They haven't been on tangible ground. Well, man, they've been flying off in the clouds, you know, more and more and more. You know, I think Eisenhower was one of the last reasonable ones.
Yeah, and he was hard to get along with.
Yeah.
You know, we could have. It's worth remembering because I've got a book here from roughly that time, or a collection of writings from that time. We could have had universal health care in this country by the end of the 1950s, but for Dwight Eisenhower and the people who backed him and supported him, because they were afraid it was communism. You know, nothing changes.
Yep.
Oh, if you can go to the doctor and an insurance company's not making a massive profit off of you for going to the doctor, well, by God, the next thing you know, you'll be whistling the Internationale and we'll be communists and all we'll eat is borscht and turnips.
Brother Bob, the archetype never changes. The archetype is the same. The archetype is always the same. It doesn't matter what you call it. It doesn't matter if you call it Zeus. doesn't matter if you call it Jupiter. It doesn't matter if you call it communist. It doesn't matter if you call it socialist. The archetype is always the same. It never, ever changes throughout history. It's the same. Always. And that's why we can bring up the archetypes of Rome to explain why we're going in the direction we're going to. History most certainly repeats itself over and over and over and over again. And it happens, interestingly enough, happens to happen faster and faster. Well,
yeah, it's that acceleration factor that's the real ass-kicker in this whole process.
Well, yeah, well, look, they've been going after, right? It took us how long to get the Magna Carta, right, from the Dark Ages. Then it took, you know, all this time, right, FDR, we finally get the New Deal, right? Because we know, anybody who knows anything about history about America knows the 1900 America sucked. 1850 America sucked. 1800 America sucked. They all sucked. They were terrible. It was a terrible time to, I mean, yeah, all right, granted, yeah, people made money, they did, but for quality of life, standard of living, are you crazy? Go look. Children working in factories, children, people getting, you know, we all know Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, we see all these horror stories, we know what was going on back then. No rights, no nothing, right? Big giant, you know, robber barons making their deal, right? So when FDR gave us the New Deal, they, right, that built the middle class. The New Deal, unions, women's rights, all that stuff, that built the middle class. We wouldn't be here without that stuff. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be able to say, oh, I'm proud to be American. Well, what the hell are you proud about? If you're not proud of the middle class, the majority of these people here, and the fact that everybody can make it. If you're not proud of that, you know, you're going to sit there and be happy that 40 million people are unemployed or whatever it is, or 40 million people have to live in this squalor. And they need an earned income credit in order to kind of...
Yeah, I mean, did you notice, I mean, granted, maybe, I don't know, do your girls still watch, well, no, probably not, but Sesame Street?
Yeah, oh, certainly, certainly.
Well, did you see the latest character, the latest Muppet introduced on Sesame Street?
No, no, but I read about it.
Yeah, they've got a starving Muppet now.
Mm.
And I'm really proud to say that a West Virginian, the country superstar Brad Paisley, got on board with Sesame Street to help introduce the issue of food insecurity.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is noble of him, and I praise him for it, and my God, he can rip the strings off of a Stratocaster if you've never heard him play. Wow. But it is the fact that in 2011, we have to introduce a Muppet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they introduced an HIV Muppet. And it was, that's rational and responsive to the current times, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've got a starving Muppet. A Muppet who is hungry. A child Muppet who is hungry. It is the mark, is it not, of a nation in decline that it is even willing to remotely tolerate that it would have within its territorial borders any child that is hungry. I mean, this is the United States, for God's sakes, right?
Yes, sir. And, you know, well, I mean, that's why we, I'll tell you. Well, Jim Henson, we just passed his birthday if he had been alive, but what a visionary, huh?
Yeah.
The people who he picked around him, what visionaries. And it is true. And I'll tell you what, that's the way we're going to get change. You know, I mean, that's the way we're going to sit there and like, wait a minute, whoa. We got Muppets that are starving and those, and that's an American kid. This is 2011.
And see, the right-wing response to that is, ain't neither.
Yeah.
And you cannot conduct meaningful public policy or have a public policy debate in which one side is presenting facts and the other side is, as I've noted before, saying, poopy head.
Mm.
You can't do it.
Yeah. No.
And far from we being the ones who are going to get left by the bus, you know, it was Reverbo a while back, who said, no, we're on the bus, we've held the door, we've sat here and idled the engine. It's time to get on and close it and go. Because, the problem, Albert, is I don't know how to get around these people. Because maybe we're finding out that the most toxic combination of all is ignorance and lots of money behind it.
True. But we got it. But we have the truth. And Rush Limbaugh, with his projection, told us, we run them over. They'll come along. They will. They're not, you know, they don't have the intellectual acumen to lead anything. You know, they like to make their money. They like to be greedy, sure. But in the big picture, no. You know, these are the pigs that get a little too, wrapped up in their own hubris. And that's, you know, what we...
And by the way, you're right. This whole thing is growing. You're in the chat room. I'm in the chat room, too. And I'm seeing Texas Betsy noting that in Austin, the group is at 1,400 people and growing. Buses from the university to downtown Austin have been packed with the Occupy Austin movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's springing up all over the place. I mean, you've got people doing Occupy Podunk, even if it's two or three people that are sitting in and sitting down and staying.
Indeed. And Obama, President Obama, better pay attention.
Well, he finally mentioned it.
He better use it. I know he mentioned it, but he needs to, like, this should show him. Your half-assed nonsense, or you're bending over backwards four times, or you're this, or you're that, or you're giving it... No. That's not why we put you there. That's not why we put you there at all. We put you there for change. And that's what we need. We need change. That's not what these dummies have been doing for the past 30 years and accelerate it. We don't have time for that. We do not have time for that. We're running out of resources. Capitalism is consuming itself. Yeah, and as it, right before it consumes itself, it burns so hot. Right? It's never been at the levels it is now. But what jobs? What growth? Where? Where is it? It doesn't exist. So he better wake up. He better really, really wake up. And take ownership of this. You know, this is, you know, I mean, if he's going to sit there and, yes, like Van Jones said, yes, we can. And his ass better do what he said. He's the one that started it. So his ass better sit there. And I'll tell you, he'll get elected again. There's no doubt about it in my mind. He just has to start saying, you know what, actually, you guys are right. Did you read the list of what they want?
Yeah, I did.
Is it from another place? Is it in Vulcan or Klingon or is it crazy?
No, it's...
Because in what, how many years you and I have been talking, haven't we said all that?
Well, you know, not to sit here and pat ourselves on the back, but
no.
It is the kind of stuff that we've been identifying all along. And coming and staying and not going away is part of what we've been talking about all along, Albert.
Yes, sir.
And so, yeah, you know, that's just, we're this little community of people engaged in meaningful, forward-thinking conversation, and actually, I think we are doing the visioning that it takes others a little while longer to catch up to.
Amen. Hey, the collective consciousness—that's what it is—the thousand monkeys.
And it's about envisioning the future. I found a website. I should have mailed it to you. I found a website the other day that you're going to have to go and look at. Longnow.org. I just happened to be reading an article, and it was a great little mind bender. About the nature of music and the nature of art between a fairly recently celebrated English author and Brian Eno. You know who Brian Eno is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, music for airports, ambient music. And in the midst of this, they mentioned that he had put his backing, Eno, behind an organization whose sole purpose is to vision the long future. And the minute I saw that, I just clicked on the link. Oh, I got to go there because, you know, that's where we've been talking about that for years, Albert.
Yes, sir.
You got to think past tomorrow. You can't live for tomorrow, I guess. You got to live in the now, but you've got to think about those seven generations you were talking about from the Iroquois Confederation. And so consequently, there's this outfit out in Frisco called The Long Now, longnow.org. And wow, what a wonderful website it is. Wander around. They're building this giant clock that will more or less run on its own for 10,000 years. And they're going to, like, stick it inside a mountain somewhere in the Utah desert or something.
Awesome.
And you know, it's not an esoteric exercise. It's a means of... It's a means of bringing to life the fact that we have really become very, very bad at visioning the future. So
that's because we're over here looking at our feet for change.
Yeah,
we're looking for change.
Or
look up at the sky.
You know, or we're being a jackass like me and getting up and watching Joe Scarborough and Mika instead of going out and taking a nice thought-inducing walk.
Mm. I'll tell you, I think we all impact each other. You know, if you slap water, the molecules there, they're all reacting one way or another, and we're all molecules in this planet, and, you know, we affect each other. And,
yeah, and right, in the course of watching the Ken Burns documentary, which I've now mentioned several times, it had an impact on me. I will never forget Wayne B. Wheeler. You know, yeah, what a nasty human being that creature was. But there was a promo that ran after the close of one of those episodes about a series coming up that includes, I think it's on Nova in November or something. And they're talking about the nature of time. And, you know, these physicists who think about things that just make our toenails ache to even ponder are talking, well, you know, time may be an entirely artificial, it may not even exist in any sort of universal physical form. Time may be just something we made up to get through the day. And so, you know, here it is, 2011. I'm going, wait, Kurt Vonnegut wrote Slaughterhouse-Five when? Billy Pilgrim has come unstuck in time. Montana Wild Hack, all of that. Wait, what? And they're catching up. So, you know, the science catches up with the philosophy sometimes. And make no mistake that Kurt Vonnegut is as much philosophy as it is anything else.
Indeed.
You know, if Voltaire writing Candide is philosophy, then by God, so too are Cat's Cradle and Slaughterhouse Five and God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater and Breakfast of Champions and all of those. But the idea of coming unstuck in time, it's looking more and more like it's not that we come unstuck in time, that's how we live, and we just hang on to the concept of time as a means of coping.
Mm. Well, let's hope... Another student of the passage of time. Let's hope those people were right in a way. So it's about a consciousness explosion. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you could see that consciousness is dwindling. If anything, it's expanding. If anything, it's getting deeper. And under people's understandings are becoming more lucid. And it's more and more people. And like a fire, it's going to keep spreading. I mean, it's going to go, the fire of the mind, the light. You know, people are being the light they wish to see, and now that light is starting to turn on other people. And I do think we have, I think we have the time. I think the time is on our side. You know, I think that, you know, we sit here and we look, you know, we're going to start to become more, you know, listen to our instincts a little bit more, because that's really what we're talking about. We've shut off instincts. You know, the survival instinct, you know. I mean, even lemmings, they regulate their own population. Because there's a part of them that understands that not, you know, 50 million lemmings can't survive on this island. They don't all go off, but that's how they call themselves. Now, I'm not saying we do our calling with education. We do our calling with condoms. And yet we still have to battle the people that think that condoms are a sin and we shouldn't do that. And while their children are the ones that always are having, you know, right, the red states, right? It's always the same deal.
Yep.
They're the ones with the most divorce, they're the ones with the most this, they're the ones with the most that, right, all these other problems. You know, I'm telling you, you know, the thing is when, you know, I think you and I, when people in long, you know, in our cloth, you know, I think we have what it takes to kind of look at ourselves and look within ourselves, and that's the thing that we don't have the time for these others to start looking.
Exactly, and by the way, just got an email in from Jenny a little bit ago. She said, isn't Albert from Wisconsin? Yes, Albert is from Wisconsin. She says, Scott Walker changing the rules to allow relaxed mining regulations in Wisconsin. They're mining sand for fracking in western Wisconsin. And we also have the tar sand pipeline already flowing through our state. Sad news.
It is sad. It's sad and it's stupid. And I'll tell you, Walker, he doesn't have much time. So he's trying everything he can. They all are. They know it. The writing is on the wall. They're done. I mean, look at how many people came out. Look at how many people came out. You know, all right, granted, they didn't win all their little so-and-so selections because Walker is the real target. He's not these other senators and congressmen, blah, 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 blah. But granted, you know, in my western Wisconsin, my woman, you know, Jennifer Schilling, destroyed Kopenke, destroyed him. It was what, by 15, 20 points? It was an annihilation.
Yeah, it was a rat killing.
Yeah, it was a beating. So, you know, and I'm telling you that, and maybe I'm not too biased, but I do think that people, you know, they're sharp enough to understand what this guy does. Nobody likes this guy. He don't even like himself, and everyone knows that. And I mean, hey, I got quarries by me that do the sand for fracking. I mean, I understand where we're at. You know, it's going to take a stupid pipeline, and it's probably going to take a stupid pipeline bursting and, you know, washing out a couple people's houses. And, oh, it's going to be a terrible mess. We don't need to go in that direction. We definitely do not. We don't even need to go. We don't need it. That's the thing. We don't need tar sands. And that's what people need to have the, you know, confidence. You know, because I'll tell you, I don't know how many people I talk to. Oh, yeah, well, solar's not ready yet.
What? Yeah, tell that to the German cooperative that's having to give away energy.
Yeah.
Please, will you use some more electricity? Jesus, will you turn on the... I don't know. Just pull the switch down in the toaster. Never mind the bread.
They think... Well, they... Bob, I mean, you know, like, I could see people getting away with that argument in the 70s. But that's the 70s. That's not in today. There's been so many innovations and examples. I mean, we've talked about it. We've talked about it so many times. It's all there. The technology's here now. And it's only going to get better the more we pay attention to it. What do we need? We need batteries. You know, if they would have made batteries, solid-state carbon nanotube batteries, even big ones, big, giant carbon, it's carbon. It's nanotubes. If you've got the gas and the catalyst, you've got almost, that's an almost infinite supply. We can almost make an infinite supply of carbon nanotubes. You know, when we talk about, you know, how capitalism needs infinite growth and infinite resources, well, we can make almost infinite nanotubes. That's one thing I'm kind of confident about. You think about what a carbon nanotube is, carbon molecules. We need to get those carbon molecules that we release from all the coal burning, all the petroleum burning, all the other stuff burning that we've done over the years, and then we'll suck it out of the atmosphere, just like the trees do, and we'll take those and we'll separate those carbon molecules, and we'll take those carbon molecules and we'll make something useful out of them. And we'll trap them, take them out of the atmosphere, right? What's wrong with that? We don't need that kind of, we don't need 368 parts, right? Remember they were talking about 350.org? It's too freaking late for 350. We're at 360, 370 already. It's only going to keep accelerating. Blade Runner. You want Blade Runner future? No, you don't. I know you don't. Nobody does. Who wants Blade Runner future? Fracking, schmacking. Get the hell out of here with this. This is not what we want. This is not what my kids, this is not the future that I want for my children, that anyone with a brain wants for their children. This is not, it's just not going to stand. It's not going to stand. It just is not. You know, you think, you know, why do you think Wall Street's as rich as they do, as they are? By the 1%, you know, it's not going to stop here, you know, because energy is one of those things that they have a monopoly on. They're the ones that sit there and they, you know, what is it? For every $4, when gas is $4, $1.10 goes right to the Wall Street speculators. Per gallon. Well, for
yeah.
What? For what?
No,
what
these are
that?
Not, and that maybe that's the whole upshot of it all. These are not insurmountable problems, Albert.
Mm-mm.
And they even have, as I mentioned last night, some of them have elegant solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Elegantly simple solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Solar panels on every roof. Right? Use the middle of the road for windmills and this and so on and so forth. You don't want somebody, well, who wants to live next to a freeway? I don't know, but there's plenty of land in between that freeway, on the side of the freeway. Put the windmills there. Put them there. They'll be fine.
Yeah, and let them charge the tracks for the trains cross country.
Exactly, and yeah, exactly. This is what we need. You know, I just looked at you know what was it? The thing was hitting 600 kilometers an hour. They have trains in Japan 600 kilometers an hour. That's 300 miles an hour. 300 miles an hour. What? What are you proud about? You proud your train does 75? Is that what you're proud of? You know, big American muscle. You know, I mean, and now, the cargo's coming through. Man, no, we need our own thing. We can't fly planes forever. We just can't. You know, that's right, we can't consume all this oil. We can't do any of this stuff. No. We need to get that stuff the last drops. And when we're on top sands, we talk about a billion times, we're at the last drops. When we're on the last drops, we've got to use the last drops to transition to the future. And the only thing that I know that's going to be here, besides, you know, cockroaches, is the sun.
You know, those assembly lines with the 6-foot-tall cockroaches standing on two legs and working with four, they're going to be so much better than us.
Yeah, probably.
No, I hate that. It drives me crazy. But, yeah, the sun's going to be here for a couple more billion years. And, of course, I guess you saw where the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to people, three guys, two Americans and an Aussie, who figured out that, no, really, the universe is expanding. And that at some point it's all just going to freeze up, But really, we don't have to worry about that for a while. You know, that whole Robert Frost poem, or maybe it was Sandberg, about some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. Well, it's ice. It's ice.
Oh, and that's just that, but we don't know. We don't know all kinds of things. But still, it's, even if that was, if that's the reality, and we've already been able to see it, that's in 15, right, 20, 80
But if the species can hang on long enough, we'll figure out a way to, you know, get in the phone booth and get to the next universe before this one freezes up anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Isn't that it?
It's the curse of so short life, Albert, because wouldn't you love to be there?
Yeah.
But maybe it's worthwhile, and maybe there's a little whispering through the universe that will at least marginally, in some sort of tiny speck, take note that there were people who were there before there was there.
Mm.
Now I'm beginning to sound like a Pink Floyd record, but I think you know what I mean.
Of course, Pink Floyd fan. Anyway.
Albert, have yourself a wonderful evening, brother.
Always, brother. You too.
Take care. All right. Bye now.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. And we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, you know, I got to bring up the death of Steve Jobs. Damn, he went quick.
You know, I've read over the last day or so, and I have great sympathy for him because the ailment, it's not pancreatic cancer with me. I managed to get a PET scan, so we know there's no cancer. But it's my pancreas tormenting me, okay?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a...
And it hurts like hell.
Yeah, that's a deadly one, too. It's anyway, but the thing that I was sort of... I just was like, oh, my God, it's just sort of blanketed the coverage. And also, I'm sorry, but can we drop the comparison to Thomas Edison?
Yeah, that one didn't get me either.
I'm just like, are you kidding me? Edison, you know, that development really contributed to the good. I'm sorry, making, electronic devices that causes people to jump out of buildings, I can't lose that aspect of it. Plus, he was hella anti-union and hated the teachers' union and... You know, so...
And of the, you know, the Apple was born of the collaboration between Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs. And arguably, the genius was Wozniak. Because, you know, he's the guy who did the biggest part of the operating system.
Yeah. Well, I just am more sort of, you know, this sort of, you know, I mean, it would be a little bit different if we weren't sort of inundated by the glories of these CEOs and all this bullshit. At least he created something that you could touch. It's not just pushing papers, you know what I mean? So I'll give him that. But, you know, I can't, I'm sorry. It's just, you know, it's just kind of funny because the one thing about this protest that's going on are the ones that have popped up. You know, it really has sort of cast a bit of a, I don't mean a cloud because it's good to me, but it certainly has sort of, put some perspective on things if people want to pay attention, because this ain't no corporate, you know, business getting people together like that Tea Party, and I don't know. I don't even know where this is going to go, but it certainly is.
And I don't think you're alone in that, because I don't think anybody else knows where it's going either.
No, but it's definitely a different feel to it than anything I've seen going on in this country in a while. And it's just sort of exposing the realities of what people are fucking going through. And also, the propaganda is so thick in this country to the point where these dumbass rich people are hella stupid. Why the hell would you put a sign up saying we are the 1%? Is it a joke? They really, you know, most times some rich people with some sense, they keep their shit on the DL, but these people here, they hella dumb. I saw that and I thought, wow, you really need to read some French history right about now. I couldn't even believe that.
Yeah, and go out the back door.
No, but I mean, it's beyond the beyond. Just like, hey, listen, you know, the 1%, of course, has a lot of power and are sort of running things, but There's a lot more of us than them.
Without a doubt.
And they're not going to guard each other. They hired the 99% people to guard their asses. So they should really be careful. I was quite taken aback by that sign in Chicago. I was like, oh, my God, you know.
Well, and wasn't there another incident of people leaning out of windows in New York drinking champagne?
Well, yeah, there was that whole thing. That's the same kind of thing, though. But it just really smacks of not even any kind of common sense. You know, the arrogance, it's not even arrogance at this point. It's just beyond the beyond because I guess they think it's a joke. But they should be careful because for Americans to step up this much is mind-boggling. And they should take that to heart if Americans...
Because we don't do that.
Because we don't do it. That's what I'm saying. And these dumbass rich people, you know, I'm just sort of thinking, wow. You know, that's why I was laughing at that whole Sorkin thing. It's like these slimy reporters who... This dude had the nerve to write, well, I got a call from some CEO from a bank asking about... What's going on with these marches and protests? Do I have to be concerned about my safety? The whole idea that the dumbass wrote that in his article, I was like, wow, these people are so...
Well, trying to create a sense of implied and impending threat where none exists whatsoever.
And also, though, but you're a reporter. And you're a handmaiden. You're just a handmaiden for these people.
Well, look at this Erin Burnett.
Yeah, that bitch. But she used to work for Goldman Sachs. It's just like, you know, they, you know, it's like if you do a little digging, you find that, oh, bitch was used to work for Goldman Sachs. Now she engaged to a Citigroup executive. And she's going to be on TV trying to talk about, you know, how, the thing is, it's really easy to find out about these people. So she looked like a complete idiot, although I guess she's supposed to be calming the concerns of dumb middle America. Is that what the deal is?
If that's what it is, that beats the hell out of me, Sandra.
Who's
because
speaking to that's what I'm saying about these people. They understand that the wealth.
She's speaking to that group of people for whom the ads on Sunday morning talk shows have meaning. You know, we're Archer Daniels Midland. We're feeding America. You know, they don't sell anything. No, those are stock market ads. Come on.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, though, but with the gap widening and the real economy being revealed by the numbers of people who are just willing to do this, no. And it's funny because I see Obama. He ain't that stupid, is he? I see he making a little bit of noise. Yeah, bitch, start talking.
Yeah, let's see.
If you want to jump front of the parade, go ahead. But it's interesting to see, you know, a little change in his rhetoric right about now.
Yeah, what was this? Yeah, here it is. I think people are frustrated, and, you know, the protesters are giving voice to a more broad-based frustration about how our financial system works.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't care. He acknowledged it. You could have
Right. Talked
my ass over, okay?
How much longer could he have gone without acknowledging it, though, Sandra?
He didn't acknowledge, Wisconsin.
Well, he sure didn't put on his comfortable shoes and go march like he said he would. But
but the thing is, it's just kind of, you know, it kind of fits into with whatever little agenda he's running because he's pounding them with his jobs bill. And the Republicans are looking so bad. Oh, my God. So if he can work it right, he can certainly turn this to his advantage, i.e., I put up something, I told you to vote for it, and you didn't, can shift some of the blame onto them. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that was the plan all along, and if anything, I was a little frustrated with the political cynicism of it, because nobody in their right mind thought the Republicans... If he passed out a... If he proposed a... The saving kittens from burning trees bill, the Republicans would say kittens got to die. So that's the frustrating angle on the jobs bill is that nobody had any misapprehensions that there was a chance of this thing passing. But the Republicans have gone completely out of their tree, Sandra. You got this goober from Texas, Louie Gohmert. Did you catch this one?
No,
The Obama jobs plan is an assault on marriage that encourages divorce. I mean, you want to talk about reaching?
Yeah, well, no, I mean... No,
that's reaching with rubber arms.
No, but the thing is that it they are just sort of horrific. So their only chance is to, you know, use their, I guess, all the money that's rolling in. But see, the thing that's disturbing is people take to the streets when they figured out that the usual means aren't working, i.e. the ballot box, right?
Exactly.
So I'm not too sure, you know, I'm not too sure what the next move has to be unless people are prepared to just continually flood the streets and the U.S. will operate that way for a while, which I wouldn't be surprised because you're not getting any response at all from the government that's in power. And if you get more and more people in the streets, as these progressives in Congress are sort of piping up now, it's interesting. It don't take much. So if you continue this for a while, they have to respond. It's interesting. They're already responding to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, the laughter, the derision is a response in and of itself.
Well, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about some of the members of Congress. I've heard a few people, you know, make comments about it. And,
well, you know, Kucinich has come out and said very good things, as one would expect.
Yeah, and I heard some of what's her name, Cantwell, or somebody like that. I forget her name, but also Harry Reid. You know, he's proposing the millionaire surtax, and all of this is on top of, you know, Spain, France, all these people are taxing the rich. I mean, they're not hiding it. It's straight up. So I think there has to be some sort of tipping point when you get these politicians like Reid, you know, they're kind of making a little bit of mousy noises about the tax thing. And I think the Republicans are going to be kind of pushed against the wall because, like I said a long time ago, no one's going to let themselves starve to death. You see? They're not going to do it.
No.
And there's too much around. And if people see people organizing what they did in New York, where they're setting up means of taking care of each other and how it's been going and going, that ain't going to do nothing but draw more people to it because there's a lot of people out here hurting.
And that's probably one of the most important elements of the whole Occupy Wall Street thing is that, nobody's eating steak, but they're eating. They're trying to address issues of health issues and basic sanitation and things like that. They are setting up a little microcosmic culture.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't, like I said, you know, who knows where this is headed, but the one thing that it is doing, even in the horrible mainstream media, is that, you know, they have to sort of take notice of it in some form. I don't care what form it takes because it's a different dynamic than they've been used to. So as far as I'm concerned, that's an improvement. And it's up to the people who are hitting the street to form it into something a bit larger. But I certainly don't want to hear the professional left commenting on it at all. Truth be told, I'm like, whatever.
And you mean the hand-wringers and the concerned trolls?
The people who think that it should take some sort of form. As I thought, it's like, it's Occupy Wall Street. We know who the damn enemy is, and so do they. They're at Wall Street. They're not Occupy Central Park. Shit.
No, and that's, you know, that's again, that's a failure of the so-called professional left and the for-profit media generally, is if they don't see a form, and, you know, we're wandering off into Plato land now, I guess, if they don't see a form that they recognize, it isn't real to them. Do you see what I'm saying? They have to complain about the amorphous nature of the structure because the lack of any recognizable structure to them makes them feel ignorant, which they are.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I'm just not sort of. I think that there's a lot more positives that can come out of it as long as it persists, especially in New York, because that some of the footage I saw from what was going on that last night, or when they had like 10,000 people there. Come on. That was some amazing sort of activities going on there.
Well, it was. And the next...
The numbers.
Right, and like I said, the fact that it's blooming all over the country.
Yes, I'm saying it's not, and it's sort of the thing that's really interesting, and I guess it's just, you know, I'm kind of a bit animated because it's so interesting. Because what do we talk about on this show nonstop is the economics and the fact that they have targeted the money centers. It's like, yeah, people are, they know. I don't care if it's intuitive. I don't care what. Why the hell are you going to go anywhere else now?
No reason. I mean,
it's just so gratifying to me to see that people, you know, are sort of connecting the dots, you know?
David in South Carolina just pointed something out, Sandra. He said, it's BS that Occupy Wall Street isn't focused. That's like you're telling me that the tea crackers are focused? Hell, they can't even spell focus. It's a different kind of focus.
Well, no, you know, I think that, a broad brush of targeting where the money is, like whatever Sutton, Robin Banks, that is a great start because everybody can understand bread and butter issues like this, see? I understand that, I guess, you know, they could, what kind of demands are they supposed to show? As soon as they do that, they can be marginalized.
Well, or they can be branded terrorists, you know, because only terrorists have lists of demands, Sandra.
Right. Oh, yeah, all that sort of stuff. So, you know,
But, I mean, did you see this thing out of St. Louis? Isaac sent this to me last night.
Yeah, Bank of America thing?
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to follow up on that, but I don't have put anything past Bank of America. You heard what that CEO had the nerve to say, right?
No, what?
He came out and said, you know, we're entitled to make a profit. That's his response because, you know, people are fucking losing their minds about Bank of America and their $5 fee. He had the nerve to come out and say, it's our right to make a profit. Can you even believe that?
It's one long let them eat cake moment, Sandra.
I just was like, oh my God, you know. So.
But when you've got ordinary depositors, and we're not talking about 1,000 people standing outside of a Bank of America branch in St. Louis, it's just a handful of people. Wants to go in and withdraw his money and go find a local community bank that he can do business with, or better than that, even a credit union, you know?
Yeah.
And they've got SWAT teams around the building, and they've got rent-a-cops. No, I'm sorry, sir, you cannot come into this bank and access your money.
I don't even know what to think. I mean, I would like to, is this sort of widespread, or what kind of incident was that? Is that one branch? I mean, have you heard anything else?
I haven't seen anything more. No, but of course there is a widespread disgust with Bank of America over this $5 fee.
Oh well, as it should be. I mean, they jumped the shark on that. That was like way up north. They really are out of it. If they think that just by virtue of you having a fucking debit card and an account that don't have $15,000 or more, you're going to have to pay $60 a year? No. It's time to go to the credit union. What do they think people are going to do? Trust me. I think they're going to go to where Netflix. You know what happened to them, right?
Yeah.
I think Bank of America is going to lose a lot of customers behind this, you know? It's just, and it's like principle. It's like, oh my God, what?
But this raises issues, Sandra, of the free market. And the question of, is the free market only for the people who are profiting by it? If it's a free market, then everybody who is disgusted by that $5 fee with Bank of America has a free market right to go and stop doing business with them. I mean, isn't that the kind of crap that the Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist preaches?
Well, yeah, but we don't. But this is a corporatist. This is corporatism, though. Backed by SWAT teams. Speaking of SWAT teams, we had some person who lost his mind at some sort of quarry in Cupertino. Did you hear about this?
No.
Yeah, he shot up two or three people, seven people injured, killed some people, and he's still at large, the last I heard. But the thing is, the Do you realize the police department? It looks like the damn military, Bob. They were running around in armored personnel. I couldn't really tell if we were in Baghdad or if they were police, because everything seems to have been up a notch now. It's all SWAT teams all the time.
And of course, that you know, they've got the armor on. You can't see their faces. There's no badge number. There's no name.
Yeah, and this is, you know, I saw civilians, and that's what I'm calling us, mingling among whatever that police force was in Cupertino. I was like, wow, yikes. So, you know, it's a real sort of perfect storm brewing here, because if people become poorer and poorer, they're going to be turning to the streets more and more, especially if they see sustainable movements happening. So, in the meanwhile, Obama, you know, yeah, shit, he must be thinking, where the hell am I?
Well, I hope he takes your advice and runs out in front of the parade.
We'll see. I don't really know.
But by the same token, the minute he does, well, but what's he got to lose?
Well, he, you know.
Not the presidency.
The presidency is kind of, he's in trouble with that as is, so he really don't have nothing to lose.
And, you know, there's a lesson to be had out of that Prohibition series that Albert was talking about, and I've mentioned a couple of times. I didn't know it. I always assumed it was just the case that. But FDR went into into the 1932 election trying desperately to avoid addressing the issue of Prohibition. He, you know, just hoping he could kind of ride the bad economy and the Depression and, you know, not really have to talk about the Volstead Act. But
yeah,
he got pushed into a corner by Al Smith, who had been who had worked tirelessly to end Prohibition and was compelled to take a stand that he didn't want to take. So, you know, is there a possible parallel here? One would hope so.
There are certainly some interesting parallels that can be made, especially if this increases. You know, like the 30s all over again, because we know that the indices that we're being fed are like a load. And people taking to the street reveals a whole different reality, that the shit is a lot worse than, you know, we're being told.
And it's the shifting and changing character of the people who are in the streets. You know, this isn't... No matter how desperately the for-profit media tries to portray it as such, this isn't a bunch of hippies.
No.
There's moms and grandmas and grandpas and dudes who just want to get their $5,000 out of Bank of America.
Yeah, and people who are working and coming after work to support, you know, that's the thing that's killing me. Yeah, I heard people being interviewed saying, well, I work so-and-so, but I'm coming after work and before work to support this.
I had an email from Texas Betsy down there in Austin, and she said not only is the Austin Police Department Chief Art Acevedo out at Occupy Austin, he's posing for pictures. That's the chief of police.
Really?
So, you know, and granted, Austin is a liberal enclave, so to speak.
Yeah.
But still, the police structure is the police structure.
Hmm. I wonder what that freak Alex Jones is doing, because that's where he's from, Austin, too.
Oh, he's probably trying to sell a video based on it.
But, you know, and also with the whole Steve Jobs, sorry, but Shuttlesworth, who died, too, did a lot more for, you know, the quality of my life than anything.
That's why I focused on him at the top of the show last night.
Well, I'm just saying, it's like, you know, those political changes mean a whole hell of a lot more to me than, you know, Apple products. I'm sorry, I'm just like, okay, enough with, I mean, I understand the Steve Jobs thing to a certain extent, but, you know, we have our own little issues with him, so.
Yeah, and again, he was the marketing guy. This business of visionary, you know, I don't know.
Well, when I heard Thomas Edison the same sentence, I was like, "Oh my God!" You know what I mean? Give me a break.
And it's all reminiscent of the fact that this is the nature of the human condition. He would have traded it all for another day.
Well, yeah, as we know how that is. You know, it's like you can't take it with you.
No U-Haul's going to the cemetery.
You know, and you know when these people, somebody like that, with, you know, I mean, God, so much money, you know that every waking hour would have been spent trying to find some way to sort out your health. Why wouldn't you? I know I would.
Well, and I'm not going to sit here and be holier than thou, Sandra, and say that I would, you know, with the appropriate money, I would have gone to Tennessee and got some kid's liver too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, people want to survive, they do whatever, but. I still am willing to quite call it despicable, too. I don't care.
You can't talk about the good without talking about the shortcomings, and we all have feet of clay.
Mm-hmm.
But those workers, you know, I'm not over that story about Foxconn in China.
That's the thing. And also, when you hear his anti-American manufacturing stance, you have to, that also sort of puts a damper on stuff. It's like, oh, wait a minute. You're an inventor, yet you had such disdain for workers here, you decided to have your shit made internationally because, oh, you could. And it's just kind of like, yeah, okay. I remember the people jumping out the windows because they have to work like slaves.
12 hours a day, on their feet, not allowed to sit down, maximum 10 minutes all day long total for bathroom breaks. They are housed in dormitories in which their roommate does not speak the same dialect as they speak, so as to make sure that they will not organize.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I don't know. I just am, right. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
I suppose I shouldn't be so horrible, but I was just kind of like, oh.
Well, I mean, and there's a big cult of jobs out there. I mean, I was upset when John Lennon got murdered. But I guess maybe that's the way people are with, because they've elevated him to that kind of hero status. But the other part of that is that, to be entirely fair, or to attempt to be entirely fair, you know, all that globalism and shipping jobs to China and everything was driven by the same market that we are complaining about with Occupy Wall Street, Sandra. Because he couldn't pay the shareholder returns and at the same time pay the insanely high salaries to his executive echelon and employ American workers at decent wages, or at least that's the way it's put forward.
Well, no, but he didn't want to, though. See, that's the thing. And also, he hated teachers' unions. So it's just like, I'm like, oh my God, okay, whatever that's about. But yeah. But the other thing about it is, my prediction is that if you got some Apple shares, you might want to sell them bad boys, because where's the company going to go?
Well, I don't think there's any way around the fact that Apple was as much a cult of personality as it is a corporation, and it's not going to play the same without him walking out on the stage and saying, "And one more thing," and introducing the next gizmo.
Right, and also another thing I have to make a comment about with that, which is just kind of disturbed me. Maybe you can clarify. Was the his death was announced on the, you know, website of Apple. I'm like, ew, does he not have family? Why is it announced that way? It just sort of disturbed me because I'm obsessed with the whole corporate scene, and it's just kind of like, yuck.
That's this world, isn't it?
Well, it's just bizarre to me. I thought, ew.
Oh, and by the way, I got to tell you one more thing, or share one more thing with you, Sandra. This just came in from Cindy up in Washington State. Open letter to Alex Jones, reoccupy Wall Street. Alex, there are several things that I strongly disagree with you on, but I've always considered you a true patriot to the American people. Woohoo! That is, until you came out and dismissed Occupy Wall Street as some Soros Democratic Party front group.
Oh God! Okay, yeah.
I had some bagger jack off the other day on Twitter try to tell me, oh, George Soros is behind all of it. This letter says, you came on air and claimed that you extensively researched the history of Occupy Wall Street and concluded that it was an astroturf, non-legitimate movement. As someone whose reporting has been featured on your site in Prison Planets, I know that you did not really extensively research the origins of this movement. If you did, you would be familiar with my extensive reports on the origins of the movement, such as the most recent, a report from the front lines, The Long Road to Occupy Wall Street and the Origins of the... So basically, this letter is calling him out for being the bullshit artist that he is.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, yeah, can't be surprised by that. I mean, I just think that, anyway, Alex Jones, God, that's a joke.
Yeah, jackass, I think is the word we're looking for.
Oh, no, anyway, listen, I'll let you go. I gotta continue on with what I'm doing.
No, good luck on the project.
Yep.
All right. Take care, Sandra. Bye now. Sandra calling from California. A couple of emails rolling in the interim. Patty writes in and says, Bob, yes, the signs in the windows at the Chicago Board of Trade were for serious, and the traders thought they were just as funny as could be on top of it. They were all born sans the irony gene. My first job in the whole world was a runner for O'Donnell Grains at the Chicago Board of Trade, as my family of attorneys said I had to do that job so I would meet someone of my class and forget all that musical band garbage. One more reason to be not so sorry mine papa died at an early age, his and mine. SOBs will never get it until they start seeing themselves behind bars. Hugs from Patty, who is shampooing rugs and pouting as I read my emails regarding and from October 2011 and try to listen to the show over the roar of the machine. Oh, and goddess, I love Albert. Thanks, Patty. Let's go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
What?
Yes.
Hi, this is Thomas.
Hey, Thomas, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm just calling in for the book club report on Rainbow Pie.
Okay.
Linda did not. Out of 10 people, I think, regularly showed up. Only about 5 people showed up, and only 4 of them read the book. So maybe the book was a little bit too uncomfortable for them. I don't know. You know,
Or too long. It's not that long, though.
Yeah, a little bit. But, you know, it's like, you know, maybe she made the right choice, but Deer Hunting with Jesus is totally uncomfortable. But anyhow, of the people, one of them made a thing. He doesn't offer any solutions, and it was pointed out to that person that it was a memoir. It wasn't a solution book. It was life as he saw it.
Right. It's an observation of a massive, Thomas, cultural shift.
Yeah, so, you know, okay, you know, I think it was a good exposure for everybody. You know, it's like, okay, you're uncomfortable.
Well, you know,
he
uses some words here and there that might not be particularly pleasant for the sewing circle, and there are some people, oh, he is the dirty word, you know, and so I don't know, but, or maybe it was just too geographically local. For some of those folks, maybe they just couldn't identify with what that reality was.
Yeah, well, but one member of the book club circle, as I might call it, she was born in the Deep South, was raised up there, and she also happens to be a person of we can say color, and she said that's how she remembers it. And so, you know, it did bring that perspective forward that this isn't all buying your bubble gum and getting your little comic strip card and that, and it's all just all fun and make-believe, but this is real. So I think that was...
No, Joe Bajan in Rainbow Pie chronicles a very tough way of living. It would be tougher probably than many people could stand, many modern people could stand. But that's the way it is with all existence, is that we always think that ours is the very is the very pinnacle of civilization, whether it is or not. But while it was a difficult life, Bajent makes no bones about saying that it was also a good life, because basically all needs were met.
Sure enough, it's like I list my dad's stories about the Depression, selling his bike, whatever it took to to keep the family going.
Yeah,
it's what you had to do. It's like I grew up here in Akron, Ohio, and in a way, some people would mark as certain areas of the city as hillbilly haven. And
There was a steady exodus.
Yeah, you had the rubber shops, and the joke was reading and writing on Route 21.
Yeah. And I think, who was it? Dwight Yoakam went on to do a song of that by that name.
Yeah, I didn't know that, but, just growing up here, you had a mix of classes growing up in these neighborhoods, and that, whether it had been the Baptists from down in West Virginia or Kentucky or what have you, or you had the old immigrant, like for Irish and the Germans here, Catholics. So you had, it wasn't a melting pot, but it was sure to cause a couple of fights after school. It's got all these little frictions. So, it's kind of amazing. But I just wanted to say, it seems to me some people shied away from the book and that. But at the same time, of the people that read it, 3/4 are going to go read his first book. So that, it provoked something that they needed to go look at. And so they're going to go get Your Hunting with Jesus. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, I think there will be a good payoff, because if you read Joe Bajent with an open mind, he does it in Rainbow Pie too. There's a guy who's out there actually defending the Tea Party.
Yeah.
And he's not, he's not doing it because he's like them, but he understands them.
Yeah, and there's maybe he gets a wider audience. Who knows?
Yeah, and I'll be, although I've read just about everything on the website, I will own a copy of the book that comes out of his essays, because that's on the way. The essays from the website and so forth, they're all going to be gathered together in a single volume.
Well, that'd be nice. I'll be interested in getting that.
And if you want to do if you want to do some advance on it, you can just go to joebajent.com and start reading. It's freaking brilliant.
Well, I won't be doing it this weekend. I'll be back down in Monroe County off-grid, and I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, you're going to go rough it some more?
Oh, I love it. Oh, it's great. Had the grandson down there, had the stepson. The stepson's down there, and we'll just cook up some good food and sit around and eat the food and drink a couple beers and just enjoy each other's company.
Hear, hear.
Get better than that. So I'll let you go. Nice call in and tell you. Well, at least I think we expose a few more people to a.
Well, I'm glad you did, and thank you, Thomas, for taking the time, and for giving the book what it truly, truly deserves. One of the things that you can't get away from with Joe Bajent is the fact that he is a bigger literary light outside the territorial confines of the United States than he is inside it. And, that's reminiscent of that old line about a prophet is never welcome in his own land. And he certainly was a prophet. Or, I don't know, prophet, historian, I don't know what to call him.
Observer.
But beyond that, extrapolator, perhaps. Just perhaps. having such a brilliant ability to deconstruct the culture in which he grew up, and try to explain it to people who are otherwise clueless.
Well, till next time.
All right, take care, Thomas.
Have a great weekend.
All right, thanks.
Good night.
Bye now. Thomas calling from Ohio. If you haven't read Rainbow Pie, I highly recommend that you do. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. We'll take a little break and come back. Phone lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Here you go, Thomas. They're reading, writing, Route 23 to just laid away the city's factory. They didn't know that that old highway lead them to a world of misery. Have you ever been down Kentucky way, say south of Prestonsburg? Have you ever been up in Holler? Have you ever heard a mountain man cough his life away, digging that black coal in those dark mines, so dark mines? If you had, you might just understand the reason that they left it all behind. They learned reading, writing, Route 23, to just laid away from the city's factory. They learned reading, writing, roads to the north, to the left. They thought reading, writing, Route 23 hard to take them to the good life they had never seen. They didn't know that that old highway laid them to a world of misery. Kids in the car after work on Friday night. Pull up in a holler about 2 a.m. Light's still burning bright. The little mountain folks set up that late to hold those little grandkids in their arms, in their arms. And I'm proud to say that I've been blessed, touched by their sweet hillbilly charm. They learned reading, writing, Route 23, to the job to lay away from the city's factory. They learned reading, writing, roads to the north, to the left tree, comfort a coal miner in the fall. They thought reading,
you'll kind of have to forgive the old DJ spirit inside me. It's kind of hard to overcome. When Thomas said he'd never heard that, well, it just kind of had to happen now, didn't it? This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's 23 minutes past the hour of 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. And let's go back to the phone lines. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Tim from L.A.
Hey, what's happening?
How would you describe it? I am happy, elated, excited about Occupy Wall Street, but in L.A.
So have you occupied L.A., Tim?
Yes, we did. The City Hall in Los Angeles.
Excellent. How did it go?
It's going really well. I saw the Occupy Wall Street in New York, and I saw what was happening with the New York Police Department. And I did something different than I don't think any other occupiers did, and that was to contact the LAPD union. And what I did was I explained to them what Occupy Wall Street is. And they recently, they wrote a blog about how the players in Enron wanted to take their pension and put it in Wall Street. And the members and the league is saying, no, don't do that. and they're talking about the corruption within this, you know, with people having their pension. So what I did was I combined that with Occupy Wall Street and tell them that's what we're trying to battle. And I encouraged them to support us. Well, 1 week later, as the people were marching from Pershing Square to City Hall, LAPD were saying thank you. They were giving them the thumbs up. And they were, like, encouraging us to do what we're doing, which was awesome.
That's inspiring as can be.
It is. And you know how people say, like, oh, LAPD is this abusive organization, blah, 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 and whatever. They get, you know, they put in the bad light. Maybe a few cops are. But all in all, they were supportive. They were cheering us on, which was really, really amazing. Oh, and just recently...
How many did you have?
There were 3,000 people marching.
Wow.
Yeah. And right now there's about 300 people in City Hall sleeping in at occupying City Hall. And recently...
And well-behaved and nonviolent,
yeah.
And...
Yeah.
Nobody brought guns, not like the teabaggers.
Exactly. They were professional, they were nice. And, you know, on their chat, they have a live stream chat. You can also watch, members over there speaking. They're saying, yeah, we support the LAPD. The LAPD is 99%. And recently, earlier today, there was an arrest because Occupy LA with a union group went to march to 7th and Figueroa, where there is a Bank of America. They told us not to, you know, occupy, because they want to occupy the Bank of America, but to just let us do it, let us get arrested. So I think it was 9 people who were arrested. Everyone was cheering them on. LAPD was perfect. They were nice. They were great. You know, a few people started to panic because they have the riot gears on, but I said, hey, that's what they have to do. It's not that they're against this or anything like that. And they know that we're going to do civil disobedience, but they're not going to pepper spray us or hit us with their PR-24, you know, the baton. They're not going to crack skulls or anything like that because...
Although some of that did go down last night in Zuccotti Park.
Right, but not in LAPD, though.
Right.
Not Los Angeles. And it's really inspiring because I heard that there were some off-duty cops who came by, and they were like, yes, supporting us and hanging around.
Well, you know, they've got pensions, and those pensions are as likely to be ripped off by the mobsters on Wall Street as anybody else.
Yes.
I mean, people are beginning to, and that's some of the stuff that I think Sandra was alluding to, Tim. People are beginning to comprehend that we've all got more fat in the fire than any of us ever actually realized. I don't own a single share of stock, but but what goes on Wall Street has the ability to absolutely crush my community.
Right.
And so, even though we're not direct shareholders, we've damn sure got not so much at the table, but we're on the menu, and this is an overall effort to get off the menu and at the table.
Exactly. Yeah. But just before, you know, they did the occupation. I mean, personally, I was going nuts, and you know, we do a Skype, you know, Mike and Lee Skype chat and everything.
You mean the horn Skype chat?
Yeah, the horn, Mike Malloy chat.
No, I just say that because I have to remind people that it was born here.
Yes, okay, the horn, Mike Malloy chat, I'm sorry. And I was going nuts. I was going wacko because of Wall Street. But when this popped up, I was like, wow, this is awesome. We need this. This is what we need. And I was listening to, like, Mike Malloy, listening to you, listening to Hartman, all these different people who were saying that Fox News or these, you know, these different mainstream medias were saying, they have no goal. We do have a goal. It's to destroy the machine that created this mess in the first place, the corruption, the evil that we're seeing. This is our goal. And how are we doing it? In different ways. One way that I want to do it is to get more people to sign up for credit unions and actually get out of the banks, like B of A, Wells Fargo, and all the different banks. Get out of Wall Street and put your money back into the community. That's the way I'm thinking. So there's no set rules per se, but everyone does their thing to destroy the machine that's churning out all this evil, this vile, this corrupt capitalism. And it's...
I understand exactly what you're saying, Tim. Just the effort to... The machine is dirty. And
yeah.
It is corrupt.
Yeah.
And there is no honesty whatsoever left in the so-called marketplace. It's like the analogy I was using the other night about a fish market. Wall Street could not exist. A fish market is a real market. And the fact that Wall Street can do business differently than how a fish market operates is proof positive that Wall Street is not a market. Wall Street, you know, Rick Perry likes to throw around that phrase Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the real scheme is taking place in the computerized market, where advantages are measured in nanoseconds.
Right.
You know, even if you had a big pile of money and you wanted to jump into the market, you don't have a prayer, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sitting at your computer and you're, sell, your ass is gone.
Because you're gonna
lose on nothing other than bandwidth, not on value of product, not on price to earnings ratio. You're gonna lose on bandwidth.
And the only way to be, well, I guess, to do decently, you gotta join them so that they can play with their money and sell for you. Because if I were to do it on my own, I'd be broke. And anyway, I have to be a multi-millionaire or billionaire in order to play. It's a gambling environment. It's not about helping the economy.
You got as good odds at a blackjack table.
Better chance in Vegas than I do in Wall Street.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, it's good to hear from you, and I'm glad you got out there and you got active. And I have no doubt when I say that I'm sure you will remain active.
Oh, man. Like I said, I feel so much cleaner now, just letting all this anger, letting all this depression out by going to Occupy Wall Street LA. And we're encouraging people around the U.S., around the world, to do their own Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, you don't even have to be in a major metropolitan area. Although, you know, Andy in Redwood City has sent me emails telling me about what they've been doing in San Francisco. Now, this is going on in L.A. It's happening in Portland. It's happening in Seattle. It's happening in Chicago. It's happening in Austin. This is nowhere near finished. This thing is still blossoming. This thing is still coming through the earth.
And what I recommend also, if you're going to start an occupation, please contact your law enforcement union. Explain what you want to do, what the goal is, in a sense. And to show respect and restraint, because when they realize that we're helping them, they wouldn't be so apprehensive.
Yeah, don't scare the people with the guns.
No.
I think that's generally a good motto to live by. Don't scare the people with the guns. And you know, the other important part of that, Tim, is the fact that it is ever so important, and I had a conversation with our buddy John earlier today via email, it is ever so important that we take away every possible thing that the for-profit media and the rich bastards can use to marginalize us. I mean, if you followed the for-profit media coverage, you know that that has been the heart and soul of every attempt they've made, is to marginalize this movement. Well, all I smelled was patchouli, or they're sleeping on air mattresses, or look at them, they're giving out nuts and berries. No, they're feeding themselves, which is a magnificent statement of microculture. But we take away everything that could be used to marginalize us. You know, dress as well as you can. so that if somebody tries to come down on you when the cameras roll, the rest of America will see people who look just like them being dehumanized.
Exactly. You know what's really strange, though? I don't know how it is in, you know, the different parts of the other occupiers, but the first time I went down, I went to, you know, to scope out the place. And, you know, there were liberals, there were also conservatives, there were some Tea Party members out there, there were libertarians. They have their different viewpoints, different ideas, but they all have the same goal.
Well, do be aware, though, Tim, that these sons of bitches on the right wing have their own agenda.
Right.
And there are overt efforts being made to divert the attention of the movement away
right.
from Wall Street and toward the Federal Reserve. Because, you know, the Federal Reserve is the favorite bête noire
right. yeah.
of the libertarians and the right-wingers and so forth. There
right.
are problems with the Federal Reserve,
right.
but the problem, the immediate problem is the filthy, corrupt, overtly the dishonest and
right.
Demeaning and whatever else other participles we can come up with, nature of this hyper profiteering speculative system.
Right. Oh yeah, I know that. I know that for a fact. But I just seen so many people though. I also saw communists and socialists, and I chit chatted with them. Good people. They're really good people.
Sure they are.
Yeah, but like, oh my God, they're not evil. They're not bad. They don't want to kill.
Don't want to eat no babies. Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Tim, I'm proud of you and proud for you.
Thank you.
And as you do more, please keep us up to date, okay?
I most definitely will, Bob. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Tim calling from L.A., who has got out of his seat and onto his feet and into the street, which is the only hope we have. Lottie shot me this link earlier in the program. I want to see if I've got enough bandwidth to make it roll. I want you to hear, just because he has been so kind to the Horn's ongoing efforts, and because he is as authentic and genuine a spokesman, having talked this talk and walked this walk for oh so very long, I thought I would play for you Malloy's remarks from earlier today at October 2011 at Freedom Square in D.C.
Ron Williams and Ashley Sanders, stage left. And I'd like to introduce you today, our MC for the rest of the program, Mike Malloy.
Hey, wow, look at this. Yeah, all right. I want to quote something from the website of October2011.org. We will nonviolently resist the corporate machine by demanding that America's resources be invested in human needs and environmental protection instead of war and exploitation. We can do this together. We will be the beginning. Can I get an amen? All right, so here we are. It's been a decade since the Bush crime family ordered the invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. It's been 8 years since the Bush crime family ordered the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Those actions were identified as war crimes 65 years ago by the prosecutors at Nuremberg, trials that resulted in the hanging of 10 high-ranking Nazis. Yeah, the chief U.S. prosecutor at Nuremberg, Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, said as the trials began, "To institute a war is to set in motion the forces of murder and destruction. To invade another country is to embark on a course of killings, destruction, and brutalities as planned objectives. To initiate a war of aggression, therefore, is not only an international crime, it is the supreme international crime, differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole." End quote. Those Bush administration officials who ordered the Supreme International Crime are now on book tours. Murderers, by definition, war criminals all, they're out in the malls of America selling books. Why have they not been arrested, tried, and convicted? And why has Barack Obama continued these wars? The reality of military aggression now occurring, U.S. military aggression, now occurring in how many? Five, six, seven countries, is one of a number of failures of the U.S. security state in which we now all live. We are also seeing the results of a complete failure of the capitalist system, a monumental social collapse. Because of the corporate state's addiction to war, we have a new generation of Americans who are finishing their formal education with no jobs, enormous debt, a deteriorating global climate, and the prospect of endless war. Our parents and grandparents are facing a societal meltdown that will destroy a lifetime of work while at the same time ending Social Security and Medicare. Why? In order to maintain the tax advantages enjoyed by the ultra-rich. The 99% of us who are not the ultra-wealthy are being told that this breakdown, this chaos, this malfunction of society is a result of natural forces at work, that there's nothing to be done. This is a lie. The corporate state is demanding ownership of everything. Our education system, our economy, our government, everything. To this, there's really only one answer to these corporate thugs. Go fuck yourself!
Yeah!
We've had enough! Wow! How dare these greedy bastards! Give me all of it! Give me everything! Give me your body! Give me your spirit! Give me your soul! Give me your planet! Give me your life! Fuck you! Do they think we're going to do this? To continue this passive bullshit that the corporations, the capitalists, the national security state has relied on for the past several decades? We have a news for you, Mr. Capitalist, Ms. Corporatist. The passivity is over. Your greed and your stupidity is now going to be met head on. It has already begun, obviously. For the past 3 weeks, there's been growing in Lower Manhattan a resistance that will not be closed off by arrests or media ridicule. The arrests continue. The ridicule seems to be disappearing. Gandhi said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. And somewhere in that progression, they begin to fear you. The fear starts once it becomes apparent that ignoring this movement is perilous, that ridiculing this movement is dangerous, that fighting this movement is impossible. That's when the fear settles in. Be afraid, corporatists. Be very afraid. What has now begun in this country will not be shut down, turned off, or turned away. And in the past 10 years, it has seemed at times like the opportunity to stop this ugly capitalist machine was slipping away. The doors were slowly closing. The windows were being shut and locked. Resistance was disappearing. But there were cracks in the doors and the windows. And as Leonard Cohen wrote, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. That's how the light gets in. The light is getting in. People are waking up and realizing the struggle here against oppression by the ruling class here, that struggle has begun. especially against the corporate war machine that is so determined and so destructive. Almost 50 years ago, free speech movement founder Mario Savio was talking about that same machine when he said, you've got to put your bodies on the gears and on the wheels, on the levers, upon the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. We've got to make it stop. We've got to make it stop. We've got to make it stop. And that's why we're here. That's why Occupy Wall Street is in New York, why other resistance is now forming in 200 cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, on and on. The lines are being clearly drawn. Simply put, and in closing, we will no longer be partners in our own destruction. We will no longer hesitate to resist. We will organize, we will fight these corporate monsters and their wholly owned subsidiary, the people who now operate the levers of power in this city. Power does not belong to a corporation. Power does not belong to a ruling class. Power belongs to the people. Thank you.
There is a reason why I describe Mike Malloy as the godfather of progressive liberal broadcasting. And you just heard it. You just heard it. And he's right. Somewhere buried within the derision and the mockery, there is fear. But it's not fear of guillotines or of the hangman's noose. It is the fear of the unknown. Because to the 1%, the idea of the rest of us having some small share in the power that they exercise over our lives is nothing short of bowel-watering terrifying. Because we are bond servants in every sense of the word to them now. And we are rattling the shackles. And we are shaking the chains. And we are saying that they no longer fit. And we will no longer tolerate them. And as this grows, more and more of us saying that will create more of that unknown. But it's not unknown to us. We know what we will do with power. We will not lord it over others as they have lorded it over us. We will seek equality. We will seek fairness. We will seek decency and justice. That's what we'll do. I just got an email in from Mark in Florida. He said, Occupy Florida events in solidarity with New York City and D.C. Join us. This has spread to over 200 cities. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark. How are you, brother?
I conjured you. How's it going, man?
I'm going great, and I wrote an apology to you for using a word, which I did intentionally, to irritate anybody that it would irritate, and I knew that it did not irritate you, but it was disrespectful if it was interpreted incorrectly, which you interpreted it correctly. And I want to say publicly to anybody that I'm sorry if it was interpreted by anybody in the wrong way, but I do that to the right-wing people who are probably have predilections for things that are way more odd than my adjective. Bob, I just wanted to call and say in regards to Beauregard Sessions, about 8 years ago, I caught him on C-SPAN, and I've been working in Dothan, Alabama, at Plant Farley, building six cooling towers, and listening to union electricians, Southern union electricians, daily talk about having to be away from their families in the Montgomery area, having to come to Dothan while they drove by the America's largest Kia or Hyundai. I think it was a Kia plant that was being built outside of Montgomery by primarily illegal aliens for anywhere from $10 to $13 an hour. And I said, Senator Sessions, I know you're proud to be from Alabama and you're a veteran. And I said, I'm a veteran and I'm from Illinois. I said, but I've worked in your state and I've worked in my own state. And I would ask you, Senator Sessions, if you could explain to the citizens of your state why your citizens are not being allowed to work because they're being displaced by illegal aliens, primarily making $10 to $11 an hour, building the world's largest Hyundai plant. And why in my native state of Illinois, we union carpenters just built a Mitsubishi Spider Galant plant, convertible plant outside of Bloomington for $26 an hour. I said, sir, is that because those are union jobs in Illinois and they're not in Alabama? I'll hang up and let you try and listen to that. He tried to interrupt me. I got him so pissed off, Bob, his little red face got, or his little white face got red. And I told him, you know, I also threw a slide at him saying, and I don't mean to be rude to anybody either, but, I said that I know that you were a National Guardsman and I was an active duty Marine, and it's kind of a macho way of getting the people give the image of macho. But we Americans need to realize that, much like Rick Perry, you had to have connections during Vietnam to get in the National Guard, because that was way much safer than working.
Oh, damn straight.
That's correct. And actually, Bob, my stepmom worked for one of the 13 allergists in the United States that would give you a waiver, but only rich kids were going to allergists back in the 60s. And 70s, but I just thought I'd share that with you, and I apologize publicly for.
You're fine. You're fine, Mark. The folks understand, and the passion that you bring to the conversation is more than understood.
I just sent you an email, Bob. Thank you. And I sent you an email, and anybody that these marches are expanding to 200 cities, and if it's any indicator. When the Latinos marched a few years ago, they marched in Dothan, they marched in Ocala, and we are now marching in Ocala and many cities all across the country. So we are on the march, and I thank all real Americans. It takes courage to stand up to intimidation, and true Americans that love each other and love the country don't need a whole lot of courage. You need a whole lot of love. And
wow.
I thank you, Bob, for being a person of peace, being raised by a family of peace, and I've listened to your voice, and you are a person of good heart and good conviction, and I pray to God that your body stays strong as long as it can, because we need you, whether you're going to Wisconsin, and you see your message is being carried on Wall Street, and it's going to be it's being carried all across the country. It's all the same argument. It's about life versus death. And I thank you, Bob. God bless you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly.
God bless you, Bob.
Take care. Bye now. Mark calling from Florida. High praise. Humbling. Humbling praise. Because right now I feel very much on the sidelines. I feel like I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I made a promise to be somewhere, and I wasn't there. And it is troubling, to say the least. But yeah, I wish my insides wouldn't rebel against me. Barring that, I wish I could schedule it. Neither seemed to be the case, but you know, we'll muddle through, and as I was saying to someone else, this isn't ending. What's going on in Washington, D.C. isn't going away. And to that end, the opportunities, don't think, if you, just the same as with me, if you're not there right now, don't think you may not yet be there, because there is a role to be played for everyone of good conscience and determination and determined spirit. There is something for everyone to do. Like I said, one of those veterans of the civil rights struggle down in Mississippi told the story last spring of the young people who looked at the older folks and said, well, why aren't you out in the streets? I said, we're not out in the streets because we're making sure you get fed. We're making sure you have a place to sleep at night. Everyone, everyone has a role. And we need only be cognizant of that and to understand that we must be not just cognizant, but wide-eyed opened and watching for that moment to arise when we can play our part. You don't have to be in New York. You don't have to be in D.C. You don't have to be in L.A., San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Chicago. There is a part for you talking in the grocery line at home. There's a part for you talking to folks as you pick up your mail at the post office. There is a role to be played. So thanks to all of you for joining in this evening. We'll be back tomorrow night with Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. We do badly need your continued financial support. I'm sorry, but we do. And we need it badly. Every month it brings new bills. The button is at headonradionetwork.com. The PayPal, that's the PayPal button. And the snail mail address is there as well. There's a tab called Contribute. Thanks to everybody who makes all this happen. Our moderators in the chat room, Sparky and Lottie. Our bloggers, Gene. Our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Our blogger, Texas Betsy, who is in a wheelchair on the street this evening in Austin. To our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, at headonradionetwork.com. My head writer and spiritual advisor, David, in Tennessee. And I don't say that lightly. That's not a joke. Thanks to John Fox, who has been working himself to the down to the bone and burning the candle at both ends and lighting a match in the middle for all he does to keep this going. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, since 2002, preserving and keeping alive the idea of liberal talk on the Internet, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there. Wander around. Join. Become a part of a desperately needed solution in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.